Welcome everybody to our meeting today. The time is just a minute after 9. We should be ready to start our meeting. Very important meeting for us to get a full presentation on the Census 22. Maybe before I proceed, Ms. Moy, any apologies that we have?
Morning, Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, Ms. Moy, I can hear you.
Chairperson, I received two apologies. One from Minister Ramakgopa. She has made prior arrangements in the executive, so she won't be able to join us. The second one is from Minister Ntsabeni. She has an engagement in Thohoyandou. Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Makhulwa will join the meeting until 9:30. After that, he has to attend the many plenaries. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Ms. Moy. Those are the apologies, colleagues. They're fairly straightforward. If there's no grievance on that, I would like us to proceed immediately to the next item. Welcome again, colleagues. We had set this date once the SG told us that on the 10th of October he was going to release the results of Census 22. And then we decided that as a committee, we don't want to engage in the media or in snippets. We would want that we have time to get the full presentation. And therefore today we have set that time, and the main item today is the Census 22 results. We'll do the briefing of minutes at the end, but our main focus is to get that full presentation. I want to therefore welcome and invite, maybe if there's a deputy minister that wants to make a few remarks, to do that, and thereafter I want to invite
Recording in progress.
SG to talk to us, and we have received the presentation, very comprehensive presentation, to talk to us about that presentation, and we'll give him time for that. Is the deputy minister here?
Yes, Chair.
Any remarks, Chair, do you want to make? Honorable GM.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Chair. To the Chairperson and the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, the Executive Management of Statistics South Africa, and other officials present here today. Good morning. Chair, it is with great pleasure that we have been afforded an opportunity to present the Census 2022 to the committee. Before we begin with the presentation, let me remind the committee that Stats SA is a South African national statistics agency regulated by the Statistics Act number 6 of 1999, section 7, number 2A of the Act states the following: the statistician general must cause a population census to be taken in the year 2001 and every 5 years thereafter on a date determined by the minister notice by the minister by notice in the Gazette, unless the minister on the advice of the statistician general and by the notice in the Gazette determines otherwise. Section 13, number 1 of the Feder states that the council must advise the minister, the statistician general, or an organ of state which produces statistics with regard to B, any matter regarding the collection, processing, analysis, documentation, storage, and dissemination of statistics, including the taking of population census, which should in the opinion of the council, be studied or undertaken. Honorable members, following in-depth independent analysis of the census data by the Statistics Council, they advise the minister, the statistician general, and the nation at the launch of the census results that the census data and information is fit for use. Chairperson and colleagues, we are here today to account on one hand for the census process that we have undertaken over the past 5 years and the over expenditure incurred, whilst on the other hand, to share the census results with yourselves that have already been presented by the Statistician General and Robert Melo to the President and the nation at large on the 10th October 2023. The importance of the statistics produced by the National Census cannot be overemphasized. The National Census is the biggest undertaking in the country, touches every household and person living within the borders of the country. It becomes the baseline information set for the country at all levels of geographic and is the only data source for demographic information at a place and name levels. It forms the basis for key decisions on the distribution of revenue in the country. It assists government, businesses, and society with decisions on where to build new schools, new towns, new roads, new hospitals, and where we will still need to improve on delivering basic services such as water and electricity, to mention a few. The census results help us to understand whether the decisions and policies we have put in place benefited the nation at large. The results should be used to hold government accountable for the state of the nation. Chairperson, the census journey, however, was not an easy one from the planning and design phase in COVID times to disruption, including natural disasters. In the data collection phase, which inevitably led to an extension of the field workers' activities. On the other hand, the difficult environment has forced the StatsSA to innovate many aspects of its operations. Key strategic and business decisions had to be made at key stages of the census to ensure that we are able to provide the evidence at hand today to inform the nation. Chairperson, we want to give this committee the assurance that we have left no stone unturned to make the census successful. We have been in close contact and continuous engagement with National Treasury on the financial state of Statistics SA in relation to the expenditure incurred for census activities. At this point, Chairperson, I will not go into the technical details, but I will ask the Statistics SA team to share with the committee the first digital census conducted and the census 2022 results. Thanks, Chairperson. I request to hand over to the Statistician General, Mr. Maluleka, to take us through with the presentation of the report. I think.
Thank you, DM. Thank you. SG, welcome to the meeting. In the previous meeting, would have received your apology with the bereavement in the family that was reported to us. And we hope that everything in the family is well, and that you did everything according to your wishes. I now invite you to take this opportunity to present to us Census 22. I will allow you between 50 to 60 minutes to do that. simply because census is not something that we do every year or every committee meeting. It's important that you present with clarity all of the issues that that are arisen out of this. We had made in our conclusion that the presentation must be anchored in three areas. Share with us what would have been the challenges and problems, what the product is, which is the result, and perhaps how this is going to be of use to the country. Over to you, SG.
Many thanks indeed, Chairperson, and let me greet Chairperson and honorable members, and indicate that we do appreciate this engagement, Chairperson, and not only on the census, but in the future, where time allows, we would like to, from time to time, share with the committee our products. We have a whole host of products, between 250 and 270 products per annum, which we would like to share, especially those that relate to the economy in the form of the GDP, those that relate to labor markets in the form of the quarterly labor force survey, and other products that the committee may direct us to appear before yourselves. Let me thank the Deputy Minister as well for opening remarks, and indeed I'm joined by other colleagues from State SA. Our presentation is going to cover the background of the census funding and budgeting process, the census roadmap, planned and actual, and what transpired, the challenges as experienced, key decisions and governance, as well as the census results themselves. Chairperson, if we had met in person, we would have wanted to show a video or flight it. We just are worried that if we flight it here, it's a 3 minute, it's a 4 minute video that summarizes everything from beginning to an end, but we will continue still with the presentation in that a census.
Well, if you have the video ready, 4 minutes is doable. It's better when we're doing it virtually. Unless it's not ready, I will allow you to flight it.
It's in order, Chair. I will ask Calvin and Ashwell to get it ready in the background while I continue with the presentation, and right at the end we can show it, Chair.
Go ahead.
Now, a census is a full count of everyone within the borders of South Africa, without omission or duplication. And I'll deal with this issue of omissions and duplications right at the end, how we deal with them. But why do we cause a census? Other than the fact that it's a momentous endeavor that engages any country in peace times, everyone, it seeks to give us demographic and socioeconomic information that enhances planning, policy formulation, evaluation, projections, budget allocations. So we will see that the whole issue about the population numbers, they are even used by the Financial and Fiscal Commission in their recommendations to National Treasury, which then National Treasury applies accordingly. So we have to make sure that we do everything within our powers to make sure that these numbers can stand the test of time. It also gives us insights into performance in relation to implementation of policies and programs. One of the things is dealing with priorities, as well as in particular, the National Development Plan, the Sustainable Development Goals and Agenda 2063. Let me hasten to say that we just released the report of the Agenda 2063 right at the end of September, which coincided with the United Nations General Assembly, as our heads of state and government always have to report to the UN on SDGs. Now, to continue, why do we have to do a census? Is that this is the only survey that can reach everyone. And all individual characteristics and records are covered in such a way that we get a snapshot of the country to provide data at national, provincial, district, municipal, and place name level. So we go beyond the municipality. So we are bound to make sure that we map the entire country. We mobilize in terms of training the number of enumerators that we need to deploy, and there have never been less than 100,000 at any given time coming back of census 1996. And we have to conduct a comprehensive publicity campaign so that members of the public or whoever finds themselves within the borders of South Africa, they know that status aid is coming. So we canvass all households to make themselves available to participate. And what happens is that a household, we usually use people who share resources, especially food. If they cook from the same pot, it's a good measure that they are a household. They may not be relatives or blood relatives at any given point. I could be staying in Gauteng and my brother stays in Mpumalanga, and we don't cook from the same pot every day. We are not a household. But I could be staying with my friend. My friend and I will then constitute a household if we are sharing the same pot. In the past, we used to say that we use the access to services like water and electricity. But it does happen as of now that you find people staying in the same house, especially in places where there are also back rooms. They pool together for electricity and water, but they are not cooking from the same pot. So the pot becomes a basis for deciding on the household rather than services. Now, we also collect individual information and make sure that we compile a vast amount of completed questionnaires which go into analysis and finally into dissemination. Over time, coming out of 1996, we conducted a census in 1996. And indeed, the act which we presented in the amendment bill recently directs us that every 5 years we must conduct a census. But we know that the nation has other priorities. So we have never been given money to conduct the census. And it's for that reason that years ago, after Census 2001, Statistics Council gave advice to the minister and the statistician general that we will cause a problem if we don't have money and we don't conduct a census. So there was a decision that at cabinet that we can conduct our censuses every 10 years. But what we did ourselves as status aid, because 10 years is too much, we made arrangements to conduct a community survey intercensor. So between 2001 and 2011, we conducted in 2007 a community survey. We went on again between 2011 and 2022. We conducted another community survey. The one for 2007, it had 284,000 households. So that's slightly more than a quarter of a million households. It was enough to give us estimation at national level. The one in 2016 was 1.5 million, much higher, almost five times higher than the one in 2007. That is the community survey. It was able to give us enough estimation at national level. So even when we didn't conduct a census, we still would be able to provide information for planning. Hence, after 2011, in 2021, we were supposed to conduct a census, and reasons why we could not conduct a census, I will come to talk to later. So let us deal with census since 1996. In 1996, we used what we call PAPI, paper-assisted personal interviews. So everything was captured on paper. It's the same in 2001. It was the same in 2007. And of course, in 2011. But the difference between 1996 up to 2011 is that in 1996, we used to have data capturers capturing our data after it comes from the field. They had to deal with character recognition of different, more than 100,000 of different handwritings of field workers on the forms, which then were captured, and we cleaned the data and we came up with results. In 2001, we introduced scanning technology, which went up to 2011. And in this regard, as we did so, the scanning technology had to deal with an intelligent character recognition of the more than 100,000 field workers. 2022, we used the computer assisted. So we went fully digital, computer assisted, in that the field workers came with a smart iPad. They captured everything. Now, otherwise it was telephone assisted, computer assisted telephone interviews, CATI, or computer-assisted web interviews, which were done on the web by people who had registered to do so. So when you press an A in the form of a smart tablet or on a laptop or anything, the characters are the same. So it made it a lot more easier. In the next slide, that we use technology and geospatial information to provide for a much faster and more efficient and a better quality product. Now, in terms of the geospatial information, the base is that we come from the 9 provinces and of course the districts, the metros, all the way to the 13,000 main places and names, and of course the sub main places. But we introduce what we call an enumeration area. So an enumeration area is a small area which a field worker can be able to do their work and move around every now and then. It's about 100 to 120, 150 dwelling units which they can work in any neighborhood. And of course, in high-rise buildings like in the cities, we have to reach everyone. And in the end, we are talking about 15.8 million points, which are addresses where we say we could easily reach. And this is part and parcel of from our planning all the way. Now, let us look at the census and the census budgetary process in the next slide. We started in 2017 and engaged National Treasury. By the end of 2018, we had requested 3.35 billion and we were given a commitment that would be allocated at 3.15 billion. And in the process, we had to deal with the fact that when you ask for a budget for a census, we do not have a permanent workforce. So the 100,000 staff members that we're talking about, they are not permanent, because when we deploy them to field, we have to wait another 10 years. And that's 10 years, we can't keep them in our books and pay them when they are doing nothing. So we use a matrix project structure that we form from time to time in terms of preparation for the census, to make sure that we get staff members from our organization, and we have a unit, a small unit, that deals with these issues of planning. But we work with other units to make sure that the project is done properly. So when we get funding, we deal with earmarked funds which do not go into our main budget, hence the 3.15 billion. And of course, in the process, about 1.5 billion was spent on recruiting contract field workers. So we can show and demonstrate that in 1996, the budget for a census was 419 million, 987 in 2001, 2011, 3.2 billion, and then by 2016, we were saying that if we had conducted one, it would have been 4.8 billion. And in 2022, when we looked at the traditional method, it was coming to 6.6 billion. In the end, we were allocated 3.15 billion, almost 3.2 billion. So the budget for 2022 is almost the same like what we got in 2011, 10 years earlier. Having said so, we can demonstrate the per capita expenditure on the census in that, one, in 1996 from the bottom, it was costing at 10 rand 32 cents in terms of a person to enumerate them, all the way to 22 rand 2 cents in 2001, 61 rand 81 cents 2011, and 64 and 8 cents. So we can demonstrate this. And in the next slide, we actually can demonstrate such figures all the way to when we were actually budgeting and when we were requesting to when we finally spent. So we can see that the gray colors are what would have been conventionally and what we asked and what was allocated, but the green ones are the actual expenditures that sustained. In the next table, Chair, we can show for each financial year what we have received. And in the process of receiving that, we can demonstrate that particularly on the right-hand side, the surplus or deficit that we were having at any financial year based on our operations. And I need to say that what we need to raise most is in the 2022-2023 financial year, where we had an over expenditure of 825 million. And of course, in this current financial year, we still are dealing with dissemination and we're looking at about 38 million. Now, I will come to the reasons why we had to go and face an over expenditure. As we can see, that planning started in 2017. And this is a matter that the National Treasury, because after we had gone on to overspend on the census, National Treasury decided that they needed to assist us because they had no mechanism through which they could assist us. So even when we were audited, a matter that I will come to in the form of our clean audit with matters of emphasis, even when we're audited, National Treasury thought it's critical that they do an expenditure review to be able to assist us, particularly because this matter will have to go to SCOPA. But the biggest issue is that in the middle of the planning for census, COVID-19 became the biggest disruptor. And we could not postpone or wait for the census to happen in 2032 or 2031. So we decided to go ahead. And in deciding to go ahead, there were delays that occurred in the field relating to COVID-19 and other issues that I'll come to. And these are the biggest issues. And we could not stop the undertaking of a census halfway once we had started. Now, let us look at bridging the shortfall. So there are issues that relate to rollover that we requested in the 2021-2022. National Treasury has rules that in the same project, they can't give two rollovers. So in the first rollover, which was impacted by COVID-19, when we were looking for gadgets in the form of smart gadgets that we needed the world over, the global value chain for supply of gadgets was disrupted. There were delays all over the world. Actually, in the process of looking for these gadgets, there is nowhere in the world through our procurement processes that we could not reach. So finally, when they were delivered and potentially delivered with delays because the global value chain for procurement was disrupted all over the world, we asked for a rollover. And in the process, when we realized that COVID-19 is still sustaining, we went to Treasury and said, we rather delay the census and deal with it at some stage when we know which way COVID-19 would go. They advised us that they can't give us a rollover twice on the same project. And on the basis of that, we have to go ahead. And if we didn't go ahead, they would start funding again in a process of funding in another cycle, which would take 10 years. And that was too risky for the nation. So we had to take a decision to go ahead. And indeed, I will come to those issues. So we went to Mincombat and asked for unforeseen, in the form of unforeseen and unavoidable request. It was not supported. And as such, we had to reprioritize internally to try and get about 69 million. But that was too small in running a census, the size of a census that we had. Now, census roadmap, let us talk about what happened from mini-test in May, all the way in May 2019. We had a mini-test systems that required specifications, procurement, and recruitment, all the way systems development throughout 2019. We went to 2020. We started with training, all the issues. This is in the 2019-2020. So we tested everything that has to do with a census. But this is not the last test. This is still the mini test. We still have the last drill, which is called the pilot. And after that, we still have to deal with the actual field work. So, and after every test, we do a debriefing to see how solid we are. Now, in the year 2020-2021, we had to deal with the pilot. So we went on a census trial as well, and we dealt with analysis and the debriefing and closure in terms of the specifications of our census. This was as planned, but in the process, not many of these issues could happen because the whole world didn't know that would be hit by COVID-19. And then we were disrupted, and those disruptions meant that in the process of the next slide, where we look at 2021-2022, everything that we had planned was disrupted. Our training, I remember at some stage, we brought field workers here in Gauteng and put every measure. When infection started, we had to actually send them home. Their families didn't even want them home because they feared that they might have come to another province and bring in infection. So it was a lot of serious challenges of COVID-19. In the end, it disrupted everything that we had planned. We had to start training online. Our recruitment, where we'd reach out to every member of the public by even reaching out to your remote part of the country. When there was the highest level of lockdown, we had to try and use electronic media to encourage field workers to apply. We reached out through adverts to encourage field workers to apply, but some of them could not make it, and it disrupted the mapping of every field worker. But even those that made it, I will come to another point later, Chair, of how they were affected when they had applied. Now, we come to all the way to 2021, when we did the pilot in July. Two provinces could not participate in the pilot. That is the Western Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. They were at their highest levels, the Western Cape highest levels of what do we call COVID-19 infections and transmissions. Whereas in KwaZulu-Natal, we had experienced unrest as is in Gauteng. KwaZulu-Natal was very difficult to navigate, and we could not test. And these two provinces are very critical in that, other than the fact that they are actually holding a large number of enumeration areas, Chair. They also have large numbers of populations. So we have to make sure that we make up for what we could not do in these two provinces, and I'll come to that later. We wanted to go into field in November 2021, right in the middle of COVID-19, but the decision by Judge Museneke indicated that local government had to go ahead. It could not be delayed until COVID is gone, because it would be unconstitutional for councillors to stay in office. So we had to shift our census from that time. And in the process of shifting it, we ended up in the next slide having the census undertaken as of the 2nd of February. That night was our launch night. So when we say it's a census night, we go into all areas of exit of the country, border posts, airports, everyone who is in the country at midnight when we kick off, waking up into the morning. We capture their information because they are actually classified as being in the country, because we are counting everyone, citizen or no citizen, everyone who are staying in a hotel. The hotels have to give us the lists, institutions, be it prisons, institutions where people with a disability, be it hostels or schools, everything, we have to get these records. Even though we don't, some of them, we don't get them on the same day, but we make sure that we reach out to them and follow up. So in the end, Chairperson, we want to deal with what transpired. And in the next slide, we will see the picture of what was happening with our field workers. And as Calvin and Ashwell are busy in the background making sure that, working with Celia, that we flight our video as soon as I present, some of these pictures that we see here, we will see actually in field. Data collection as of the 31st of May, we are saying that we dealt with the whole nation. So we can see that almost every province was completed. We were still having in progress in the Western Cape and untouched. So the brown, the full brown is untouched. In progress is that we have data had started to be collected. We had to make sure that it's cleaned all the way. And using the methods that we use for collection, the computer assisted, in the next slide, Celia, the computer assisted web interviews, which the initial uptake was 33%. We had thought that in avoiding COVID and avoiding contact, we needed our members of the public, especially those who can access or complete the forms on the web, that they assist us, but they were not in a position. At the beginning, it was just 33%, and in the end, only 400,000 questionnaires were completed online. Then we realized that no matter how much tests we had put, it was a big risk to rely on this alone, because we had other methods. So the computer-assisted personal interviews, where they come with gadgets and capture and ask questions, gave us 20 million questionnaires. And of course, the computer-assisted telephone interviews gave us 68,000. Challenges that were experienced is that in terms of human resources, over the 100,000 were deployed in the field. But in this regard, we had hoped that we can reach as far as 165 of those who applied, and in the end of 137, slightly more than 100,000, we would actually deploy to field. But we could not reach the target because the applicants, especially in some areas, there were shortfalls. But the other thing is that there are people who applied as students. So when they apply, when they are in the Western Cape, as in October, hoping that they would stay behind, or in Gauteng, they come from Limpopo and Mpumalanga, they decided they would do field work. But when we had to shift because of Judge Museneke's decision, by February, when we went to field, most of the students were no longer in their in their provinces where they are schooling. They would come back later. But they were starting their academic year, so they withdrew in large numbers. And that created a lot of challenges, but we had a lot of interventions to deal with the resource nations. The fleet. So we hire vehicles from all over the country. In previous censuses, we even had to go as far as Namibia and Botswana to get vehicles that are with hiring companies to assist us, because field workers, when they are dropped in an area where they work, or even when they work in the community where they come, which is usually the case, they work, we recruited from the same neighborhood. But the supervisors must check them and unlock problems and deal with whatever may occur. Our biggest problem in this regard was that when COVID-19 hit us, most of the companies that are for car rentals, they no longer had the stock. They sold all their stock in relation to the fact that the flights were no longer moving. They could not service anybody. So they could not sit with stock in their books. And of course, the other issue that we had to deal with, particularly as a question of COVID-19, is refusals and non-response, where members of the public, you arrive and you want to talk to them. They say, we are not going to allow you into our house. And they cannot, some of them, even when they refuse, they say, we just lost a family member in the last 2 weeks because of COVID. We are not allowing you to enter our house, or you can't even enter our gate. Now, in the process, we were monitoring in the next slide how much we were collecting. So we can see we had a targeted daily collection and the actual. So the targeted at the beginning was going very well. The actual was even higher than the targeted. But over time, it started slowing down, and it ended up leading us into a staggered way of conclusions of the provinces. So we can see that as of February, the night of the second, waking up into the third, we started field work. The first province to conclude was Limpopo in March. April was a lot of provinces, Free State, Gauteng, Northern Cape and Eastern Cape, and Mpumalanga and the Northwest and KwaZulu-Natal. The last one was the Western Cape, a matter that I will come to. But let me put it this way. In our slide, we will show that at some stage when we were in the field, when we were concluding other provinces, the Western Cape was falling far behind. When you are in the Western Cape, 64% of the population of the Western Cape is in the city of Cape Town. And it's largely the white population group. They could not take our field work. So we could not get many people from their neighborhood to do the work because they said we are paying very little. Now we had to get field workers from other parts of the Western Cape. They could not accept the colored population group or the Black African population group at their doorsteps. And it's much more challenging in that your colored population group could not go to Nyanga and Khayelitsha. Your Black African population group could not go to places like Michelle's Plain. So it's a lot more complex, which goes beyond the practice of official statistics. Having said so, Chairperson, I must say some of these issues that I'm raising, especially that we saw them in the Western Cape, are far beyond our mandate, where certain people can't be accepted. And this is the role that Parliament and the nation will have to deal with at some stage. But we can show how from the beginning we were dealing with completed. And as we moved further and further, refusals, because they are cumulative, were getting a lot more. So we had to make key decisions. As of the 31st of March, we can see we were seated with all provinces having done their work, the lowest being the Western Cape. We can see the Western Cape was sitting at 31% owing to the complexities that I've indicated. So we had to push the other provinces to finish. And as they finished, one of the things that we do is that within provinces, when a district finishes, we deploy the staff members to assist other parts so we finish quickly. When provinces finish, we deploy field workers from other provinces to other provinces to finish. And of course, we even had to deploy to the Western Cape from other provinces to deal with this matter. So in one way or another, we can say that we dealt with, in the next slide of the key decisions, we had to deal with the expenditure issues. In the process of extending and extending and extending and deploying field workers, it had expenditure implications, especially in the Western Cape. And of course, the rollover of funds, which we requested, had to was not approved, and we had to go with National Treasury. So in the end, Chair, in the next slide, we can show that our efforts showed that the Free State had the highest response rate. Response rate doesn't mean that data is, we can use that data. We have just reached dwelling units. Then we need to know when we have reached there, what kind of data we got. So, and I'll come to that later. So followed by Limpopo, 97%, KwaZulu-Natal, all the way to the Western Cape that had taken, given us challenges. So we are saying our decisions that we were making to stay in the field, rather than withdraw and plunge the project into a crisis and fail to give the nation information, resulted in a count throughout the country, with the lowest being in the Western Cape. So now, governance issues. We had ongoing engagements with key stakeholders, weekly meetings at our executive management gathering, council meetings, the South African Statistics Council. It's not a council for statistics, it's for South Africa. It advises both the minister and the statistician general. So we met them quarterly and briefed them. And they were advising the statistician general according to the Statistics Act. And in the end, the audit committee, and we were having meetings with National Treasury weekly, not weekly, monthly. And then in the process, in the 2022-23 and coming out all of the way, we dealt with matters of an unqualified audit that one, perhaps let me come to this point. One is that we have issues on the financial statement that came as an unqualified audit with matters of emphasis. Performance, it was a clean audit opinion. Material findings were compliance with the legislature. But now let us come to what happens during a census year. Coming out of census 1996, throughout history, during a census year, we have had a lot of financial challenges. There was a disclaimer in 1996 where the qualified audit in 2001, so it was in 2011. But since 2022, we had an unqualified audit with matters that needed attention. So Chairperson, I can say in the next slide that we have consistently demonstrated continuous commitment and engagement and communication with stakeholders, including the portfolio committee that was there with Parliament. And of course, we can confirm that the census results have been released and are credible, and the Statistics Council has issued a statement independent of SSA to say that the data is fit for purpose. So in the next slide, we can say, Chairperson, that to deal with these issues going forward, the opportunity cost of continuing versus stopping the project became the key driver. We had to sit there and say, we know we are going to overspend. And we had to make sure that consistently we inform National Treasury, we inform our minister, there's monthly statements that have to be signed that we had to send to the minister to say we are overspending. We had to inform Parliament, the portfolio committee, from time to time that we are still remaining in the field and it has financial implications. And in the process, the census results. The census results, all the way coming from 1996, a story that I've already spoken about, from paper-based to all the way to a fully digital census in 2022, with face-to-face, which is CAPI, CATI, and all the way. We had to deal with what are the some of the innovations. In build validation rules, we had to deal with monitoring throughout enumeration period, minimal editing and imputations, and use of independent technical experts, both nationally and internationally. Once we were done with the work, we had to make sure that we need to be sure that the data we have collected is solid. So we got specialists and experts nationally and internationally, from the academia, from different census taking all over the world. They worked with us. Council got some, and engagements were robust. And in the end, we also conducted the post-enumeration survey. And in the process of a post-enumeration survey, it assisted us in the next slide, Celia. It assisted us to deal with, it's an independent survey for quality checks. We had to deal with a quality evaluation of the census. We had to deal with coverage error, content error. And once, when I use error, it's not like there are errors in statistics. It's statistical jargon that is used to make us see how far we are from what we were intending to collect, or how far and how content, how confident we are. And these help us to make key decisions to take statistically informed basis for adjusting the census count. So in the end, other than what we collected, once we had cleaned the data, we ended up with an undercount of 31%. The highest was in the Western Cape, 35.58%, and the lowest was in the Free State, right in the middle, at 20.9%. I want us to focus on the middle column, because the outer column only deals with households. But in terms of a population count, the person's undercount is the one that matters the most. It's what the United Nations guides, that it's one of the acclaimed methods to identify those that are omitted or counted more than once. So when you have an overcount, you have counted more. Undercount, it means you have counted less. Now, what do we do? We are one of the few countries, other countries don't do this. We are one of the few countries, including the US, the UK, Uganda, on the African continent, that conduct this. What we do is that we adjust, we use this undercount to adjust. So without the undercount, we would not know how to adjust. So this gives us a statistically acclaimed method for adjusting to account for those that we missed, and to make sure that we uphold quality and the veracity of the data, because future generations, whether it's 100 years from now, 200 years from now, they will need this data, and they will need to know what decisions and what we had to face. So the population of South Africa as of the 2nd of February 2022 was 62.027 million. And in that regard, we can say that we came from 1996, where we were sitting at 40.6 million, and we grew by 10.4% all the way to 2001, 44.8 million, and we grew by 15.5% to 2011 at 51.8 million. And we grew by 19.8 million to 62 million as of 2022, which represents about 10.3 million people increases. What has happened in the provinces? In the provinces in 1996, KwaZulu-Natal was the most populous province. It was overtaken in 2011 by Gauteng. And as of now, Gauteng is sitting at 15.1 million, followed by KwaZulu-Natal at 12.4 million. The Western Cape is a very interesting case. It was position number five in 1996 and 2001. As of 2011, it overtook Limpopo. It came to position two. 2022, it has overtaken the Eastern Cape. It's now the third most populous province. And of course, we can see Eastern Cape at 7.2 million on the right-hand side, all the way, go back to the previous slide, to the Northern Cape at 1.4 million in the Northern Cape. The population sizes in terms of population group, we are saying that 50.5 million are Black African, and of course they account for 81.4%. And of course, about 5.1 million are colored, 8.2% of the population. 4.5 million white, 7.3%, and Indian Asian, 1.7 million. 2.7% of the population, and other about 200,000. The population group white is continuing to decline as a share of national population groups as play. And largely it's because we are facing two things. One is fertility amongst whites is declining. The other thing is that younger white people are moving out of the country, and they are also moving out right in their reproductive years, in that the fertility is the number of live births that can occur to a woman in her lifetime. Now, I know there was an issue in relation to Black African that was raised, Chair, and I need to indicate that this matter, in 1996, when we went to field, there was just a Black, colored, and white, and Indian in the National Population Register. The Constitution is silent about that. The National Population Register has taken out that. And of course, the Employment Equity Act in 1998 came up with a Black, as in African, colored, Indian, and white, in that Black would mean African, colored, and Indian persons. And in the process, once we have looked at that, before we went into fields for this census, other than these population groups in the form of African, colored, Indian, and white, the colored population group came to approach us and say that some of them want to be classified as Khoi and Sen, and it's not there in the Employment Equity Act. It's not there in the Constitution. So we are continuing to engage with the users, but obviously this is a matter that the nation will need to engage at some stage. We as statisticians will just deal with the statistical processes to make sure that whatever classifications we have in future, make sure, give us the stability of the data. So in terms of ages, we are saying that 14 million, 16.4 million are children aged 0 to 14 years. They account for 26.4%. The highest share is amongst youth, 15 to 34 years. They account to 34.8%. And that is about 21.6 million. So when we take children all the way from ages zero, including youth up to 34 years, we have more than 60% of our population. Adults are sitting at 18 million, that is ages 35 to 59, and they account for 29%. The elderly 60 years plus are sitting at 6.1 million, and of course they account for 9.8 million. Having said so, and having indicated that the Northern Cape has the smallest population group, I want us to go to spoken languages. Let us look at the map. The map says that Afrikaans is spoken in the Northern Cape and the Western Cape, but we know the Northern Cape has a smaller population group than any other part. So the map should not give us an opinion that we have Afrikaans being the most spoken language. It's where it's spoken. The most spoken language is isiZulu, 24.4%, predominantly in KwaZulu-Natal, isiXhosa, mainly in the Eastern Cape, 16.3%, Afrikaans, 10.6% in the Northern Cape and Western Cape, mainly in those provinces, Sepedi, mainly in Limpopo, 10%, English, all over the country, 8.7%, Setswana, 8.3%, mainly in the Northwest, Xitsonga, mainly in Limpopo, 4.7%, Siswati, 2.8%, mainly in Mpumalanga, Tshivenda, 2.5%, mainly in Limpopo, isiNdebele, 1.5%, mainly in some parts of Gauteng and Mpumalanga. And of course, we can readily say that Sesotho, 7.8%, mainly in the Free State. Having said so, I need to say that where we have gray, it means that in the maps within the provinces, there was no single language that was much more spoken. There was two or three languages that were predominant. In terms of migration, we are saying that Gauteng, Chair, received almost 400,000 moving into the province between the two censuses. That gives us positive net migration for Gauteng. It was followed by the Western Cape, followed by Northwest Mpumalanga and the Northern Cape. The other provinces in the form of Free State, KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, and Limpopo had what we call negative net migration, meaning that while their populations grew, they actually lost in the form of movement within the country and when people come from outside the country. Let us look at the two provinces that benefited the most. Gauteng, a largest chunk from the left-hand side of people who go into Gauteng come from outside South Africa. Actually, 50% of people who come into South Africa choose Gauteng as their destination. Internally, Limpopo is the biggest contributor, followed by KwaZulu-Natal, followed by Mpumalanga and the Eastern Cape. Whereas on the right-hand side now, the Western Cape, the biggest contributor to the Western Cape is the Eastern Cape, followed by Gauteng, followed by those who come from outside South Africa. And of course, the biggest contributions come from people from Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Lesotho, and Malawi. Whereas in this census, we have seen a decline in the share of people coming out of the Great Britain or the United Kingdom. These are the top five contributors. So we can see that people from Zimbabwe as of 2001 were 38.1%, now sitting at 45.5%. Mozambique, 22%, declined a bit to 18.7%. Lesotho, 9.1% in 2011, all the way to 10.2%. Malawi, 4.9%, all the way to 8.9%. And there was a decline from those from the was that the United Kingdom. In terms of education, in the next slide, we are saying that 6 out of 10 children aged 0 to 4 years had access to some form of early childhood development. This is a new question we introduced. It was never there in previous censuses. The biggest challenges remain right at the bottom in the Northern Cape and the Northwest, where we have more than 50% of the children 0 to 4 who are not in any facility. They are not in a crèche, daycare center, in a preschool. They are not with a gogo, a day mother, or home, a community playground. The biggest ones that were in facilities were in the Western Cape and Gauteng. As we do so, we are seeing in the next slide that the number of those with primary education and secondary education continues to decline. And people with no schooling on the left-hand side are declining, with some primary declining, some secondary declining. But people with grade 12 are actually rising, as we can see the second bar from the right-hand side. And with post-matric qualifications are also increasing. So we are seeing a nation that is getting more educated, more educated. Disability, we declined from 7.4% to 6% coming out of 2011 all the way to 2022. Chairperson, housing and households, we are saying that in terms of households, 1996, we had 9.1 million, 11.2 million in 2001, 14.4 million in 2011. Now we are sitting at 17.8 million. So we have seen a doubled in size from 1996 all to where we are now in the number of households. And that when we look at housing, we can see that in 1996, 65.1% were in formal housing, were in the formal housing category. And then as of 2022, 8.5%. As formal housing increases, this includes low-cost housing that we call RDPs. Our traditional housing structures in the form of those thatched with grass and informal housing, mikuku and the like, are declining. So now let us look at service delivery. In the form of service delivery, we are saying that here we ask members of the society. In 1996, remember, there was no load shedding. So this question has been coming from 1996. Electricity as a main source, access to electricity for lighting, not lightning, lighting. It was 58% in 1996 and has increased to 94.7% in the year 2022. So we can see that other than challenges now that we are facing of load shedding, the fact is that the facilities are there. If there's no load shedding today, 94.7% of the population could access electricity for lighting, except a place, a municipality called Emadlangeni, which is sitting at 72.1%, the only municipality in the country. Water, access to water, leave disruptions that may be there. Members of the public have indicated that they had two or more days of disruptions, but in terms of access to water as a main source inside their dwelling or inside their yard, we can see coming out of 1996 that there were improvements, and there were areas which 1996 on the left-hand side, there was no water. 2001, there were improvements. 2011, we were improving a lot with challenges in KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape. But as of 2022, we can see that part of the Eastern Cape and Limpopo, that in 2011, particularly in Limpopo, that had shown benefits have actually gone on a decline. Now, in the next slide, we are saying that in 2022, over four-fifths, that is 82.4% of our country had access to piped water, either inside the dwelling or in their yard. And of course, Chairperson, in the next slide, we are talking about the issue of over the period 1996 to 2022, the percentage of households with no access to piped water has halved from 19.7% to 8.7%. And indeed, when we look at the next slide, we can readily say that in Limpopo, we had Limpopo is the only province that had three times the amount of pit latrines than the national average. Whereas in provinces like Western Cape and Gauteng, we had residents that had greater access to flush toilets, sitting at 93.9% and 89.7% respectively. Now, in terms of agriculture, regardless of what they were doing or what was the purpose, Limpopo and the Eastern Cape on the left-hand side were leading in agricultural activity, followed by KwaZulu-Natal all the way to the Western Cape, Limpopo sitting at 28.7%. But when we look at purpose, we can see that Limpopo and other rural provinces were producing mainly for own consumption as a main reason, the blue color in the middle. Whereas in the Western Cape, the yellow color, orange color, producing only for sale, Western Cape had higher percentages of those who produced for sale. Now, this slide that follows, I started presenting at about 11 minutes past. Chair. Now, if I conclude with this slide, I will allow Calvin, Celia, and Ashwell to slide that video quickly so that we can show. But let me finish. No, this slide, go back to this slide, Celia. Let me finish on it quickly. Go back to that slide. It's got a story to tell. Go back to that slide. Firstly, we can see a child standing there. So during field work, children, some of them had never touched a gadget in the form of an iPad. They wanted to touch these gadgets from their parents, from our field workers, and the like. But other than that, when we finished the census, we donated 137,000 gadgets because we are not going to use them until the next census and they will be obsolete. So we worked with the Department of Education, the provincial department, and we donated them. And of course, audited, they were written off from our books and transferred as assets to these departments in the provinces to make sure that children all over the country who had never had access to facilities like iPads for purposes of their education have this access. So this slide says Ndihela Kwala. It is in one of our languages in Xitonga, which says Ndihela Kwala. It was a standard way in which our mothers and fathers finished letters when they could not read and write because we were their scribes, Chairperson. In Shivenda, Ndifelela Hanefo, in Sitswana, Kifeta Wana Fas, Kifeta Wana Moka Spedi. And indeed, in Isixhosa, they would say, Ngiqeda Khona Apha, Ngomkhulu Umbuliso. And in isiZulu, they would say, Amaningi Anginawo. And never and never again, Chair and Honorable Members, should we fail as a nation to exclude a section of the society, be they women, children, or otherwise, that they can't even express themselves and they have to go through a proxy who writes for them in the Hela Kwala, other than write as sweet as they want to their loved ones and when we have numbers to plan. Chair, I'm sitting at 10 minutes past. It's almost an hour since you allowed us, but if my colleagues are ready with the video, if you allow, we could flight it right away. Celia, Ashwell, Calvin, let's flight that video quickly. Calvin, Celia, Ashwell, are we ready to fly it?
Thank you, HG. Sure. Calvin indicated he will fly it for us. Thank you.
Let's fly it quickly so that we can hand over to the chairperson.
I'm flying that person.
Rises from the mountains of Mpumalanga. South Africa rises with strength and hope for a better future and improved socio-economic climate. This is why a census is critical in playing a role in advancing the aspirations of the majority of South Africans. In 2022, South Africa conducted its fourth population census since 1996. A painstaking undertaking, the census provides a true reflection of the country's socio-economic dynamics, its growth and its development trajectory over time.
Since 1994, we have had four population and housing censuses in South Africa. One in 1996, then in 2001, followed by the 2011 one. And indeed, this census that we conducted in February 2022. The scale of a census is incomparable to any other project in the country. And consequently, detailed and accurate planning and testing is essential to effectively execute such a project. We set out to count everyone within the borders of South Africa without omission or duplication.
People of Newcastle and all other villages, townships and towns in KwaZulu-Natal were counted. Communities across the province of Mpumalanga were counted. The Basotho people of Phuthaditjhaba and the entire province of the Free State were counted. Rwanzekuzeku and the entire province of Limpopo were counted during the census. Mthatha in the Eastern Cape, including Komani, and the entire province participated in the census and were successfully counted. The people of Pampierstad and the rest of the Northern Cape were counted. Western Cape and its citizens were counted. Sandton and the rest of Gauteng were counted. And the people of Dinokana and the rest of the Northwest province were counted.
This turned out to be one of the toughest challenges due to the complexities in the environment, including COVID-19 and how load shedding impacted on some of our processes. Indeed, I can't overstate the importance of a census for the country. Census 2022 data provides insights on living conditions of South Africans in terms of the number of households, average household sizes, and the type of dwelling structures they live in, as well as access to water, availability of essential services and facilities, as well as access to internet. This information is critical in understanding and addressing development challenges at all levels of geography and community.
As the world enters the fourth industrial revolution, Census 2022 became South Africa's first successful digital population count. A multi-mode data collection approach was adopted and used in the collection of information from respondents. These were face-to-face interviews, telephonic interviews, as well as computer-assisted web interviews.
Close to 100,000 field workers were brought on board to administer the census questionnaire. A multi-mode data collection method became an advantage in conducting the census in the COVID-19 pandemic space as strict regulations had been introduced. Censuses provide reliable data at various levels of planning. Information collected during the census process plays a critical role in planning at the national, provincial, and municipal levels. By providing policymakers with the information required to formulate rational policies and implement service delivery.
For the next 10 years, this information is going to be important for all our data users. Here, I'm talking about our stakeholders in the three spheres of government in the form of policymakers and indeed development partners, civil society organizations, the private sector, researchers, and the general public. In closing, I would like to thank each and everyone who made Census 2022 a success. Our field staff, Census Project Management Team, the post-enumeration team, as well as members of civil society who opened their doors to be counted. I must emphasize that our biggest thanks goes to members of civil society, because without them we would not have been successful. I thank you. Ngiyabonga. Enkosi. Danki. Ndihela. Chairperson, I must admit the biggest disruptors were COVID-19, the floods that caught up with us in KwaZulu-Natal and parts of the Eastern Cape and the Northwest and Mpumalanga, and of course, the unrest that occurred in KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng. But nonetheless, even with these challenges, let me assure you that we have delivered a credible census. The results are fit for purpose, as council has indicated. And we are continuing to engage with provinces to make sure that we deliver them to every province. And beyond that, we will go to the districts and municipalities. But we want these census results to be used by the nation. I thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, SG. It has been a very comprehensive presentation. You stayed within time, just on the dot. I understand I would have given you the extra for the video. It was important for us to listen to that. Thank you. Honorable members, now it's your time to interact with this presentation. And I'm now going to invite you for your comments and contributions. And I will start with Honorable Pillay, Honorable Maglu, Honorable Manyi, Honorable Yabo, in that order, Honorable Mbele, sorry, just hold, Honorable Mbele, Honorable Piri. Thank you, thank you, thank you, colleagues. In that order, over to you, Honorable Pillay.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to ask to switch my video off for better bandwidth.
Sure, go ahead.
Let me start off by first commending and congratulating South Africa. I think just listening to the last parting comments or shots from the SG, about the many challenges. And I think that as a country, as a nation, as the world, we will continue to speak of the difficulties that one has faced during COVID and the pandemic. But then having to go through COVID, lockdown, civil unrest, natural disasters and floods, they were still able to achieve positive results. And they were able to conduct the census, even though it was difficult and trying, and be able to then achieve completion of the interviews. So, Chair, I think we must, as a portfolio committee, firstly commend them, thank them for the work that they've done, and appreciate all of the efforts that have been made. In doing so, I also want to appreciate the presentation that has taken us through in-depth understanding of what the outcomes are, particularly because this helps us as a country to be able to plan and to move forward. But I have to raise some concerns, not concerns around stats, but concerns around some of the observations that has been made in respect of the census. And the first one is glaring me in the face that almost 30 years into democracy, that you find there are still areas that are, in inverted commas, no-go areas for South Africans. And it saddens me to think that there are areas where, because you are of a different color, that you then cannot go into this area to enumerate. And this begs a serious debate and discussion that we need to have as Parliament to be able to bridge the gap and to be able to promote and create social cohesion so that every South African is accepted anywhere in this country. South Africa belongs to all who live in it. Just in specific to some questions, the first one is, what was the impact of utilizing digital platforms in terms of persons employed relative to the usage of a traditional method, which was the questionnaires and having to fill in manually in terms of questionnaires? So what was the impact of utilizing the digital platforms? Also, was that South Africa in a position to estimate the population count before the census? And is there a significant deviation from such projections? And then we've heard of the 825 million, if I'm correct in the figure, but I'll stand to be corrected, about how we had to go over. And I think the explanations given makes perfect sense, but I just want to know if there was anything that they could have done to have reduced that amount, or perhaps if they're going to be looking at, for the future, if they're going to have measures put into place in terms of being able to, and I'm directly to risk mitigation. There are things that you would have been able to identify beforehand, and there are things that you may not have been able to. And now that we've had extra stuff, perhaps they would add that into their risk mitigation. Then the next one, Chair, is where and how do they be able to filter this information to all ministers, to all ministries, to all provinces and municipalities to help in their planning so that they are able to use the data that is available readily to be able to plan how we can be able to speak to that one municipality where there is no access to electricity. And I must tell you, it's applaudable, contrary to what may be out in the public domain, that this government has not delivered. It actually shows that this government has delivered. If one municipality in an entire country doesn't have electricity, this tells you that we have been working as a government and have been providing. And the fact that access to electricity and water to households in South Africa is far exceeded the number that we had must be applaudable. And I think it's important that we must be able to applaud that, because we often hear in Parliament how this government is not doing anything, how this government is not delivering. But here we have factual information that tells you that this government indeed is delivering. And Chair, then the last one is just in respect of the undercount in comparison to the enumerated households. And just to be able to just get clarity in whether they have accommodated the undercount in the final figure that we have released. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Pillay, for your contribution. I hope SG and your team, you're taking very copious notes on the issues that are being raised. Honorable Meglu?
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I want to start saying that data is very important, especially the correctness thereof. And one of the endeavors of State South Africa is to count everyone within the borders of South Africa without omission and or duplication. Now, I'm not here to sing praises to the government, but I'm here to have an input on reality in front of us. And that is the issue of undercount. Now, when you have figures and you deal with undercount or inaccuracy of numbers, it has the potential to thwart the process. We understand the reasons about the disasters, COVID-19, and a number of other things. But what is lacking in the presentation is how are we going to use disasters and how are we going to use COVID-19 in the future as a disruptor, as a catalyst to change the things for us with the next census. I think that is important, because I also strongly of the opinion that State South Africa also must have the potential to control undercounting. Now, talk about control undercounting, and be as it may, allegations of excess. We had disasters, we had extensions, and when we talk about excess, I think in terms of the demographics, we need a clear cut per province on what the results was on those undercounts when it comes to demographics. Now, let me sketch a scenario. It has been said that the Northern Cape has the lowest population. I need Mr. Maluleke to explain to us, how is it that you have the Northwest province and that you have Limpopo and that you have the Free State province that is 10% less than the undercounting of the Northern Cape. Northern Cape is 10% high. It's 10% higher than those other provinces that has much more a population. So I think we need to call a spade, because 31% is not something. It's not something to be proud of. It's an undercount. And I think, let alone telling us what the cause was, the COVID was there. But what we are seeing, people moving in and around with COVID on this visual that has been shown. There was disasters. We've seen people moving in and around, and even after the disasters. So I am tend to say that the results is unreliable simply because the 31% is unaccounted for. Now, on the other hand, and again, Jefferson's data is unique. Census is also unique. But how are we going to use this enumerates to solve this problem and to rectify these problems? I would also, Chairperson, on behalf of the committee, ask a breakdown on the dropout and resignations per province, and also the reasons thereof, because we are all aware that at times some of these field workers have not been paid. So we would like to know the reasons of these resignations, the reasons of the dropouts, and also in which provinces the set has occurred. Resignations has been affected, and there must be reasons. So we need that those kind of reasons. There are also, on one of the slides, we are talking about that provinces experience a high refusal. Maybe we must give down also have a breakdown on the demographics on those refusal, because I remember sitting in the last report of Mr. Maluleke some time, it was stated that the undercount was very high among colored Indians and whites. Now I want to get to another issue, and that is the budget. We must remember, honorable members, that an amount of 1.5 billion has been utilized. Has been utilized in order for our field workers to do their job. So that has bring nothing to change to have the outcome. The end justifies the means. So nothing has changed. The money has been made available, 1.5 billion. Those field workers were in employment of State South Africa. And in terms of the challenges that have been used here today, pertaining also to the undercount, no one has been asked to pack and go home. So I think we need some more thorough investigation with particular reference also onto the Northern Cape undercount that is above 30, with provinces like Northwest and provinces like Limpopo, as well as the Free State, who is 10% less. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Meglu. Honorable Manyi. Honorable Manyi.
Chairperson, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Apologies, Chair. Can I come back? I just have another emergency to attend to. I had put a quick note on the group. I'll come back, Chair. Yeah, sorry about that.
All right. Thank you, Honorable Manyi. Honorable Yabo.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me greet yourself, Honorable Members of the Committee. Let me also greet the Statistician General and his team. And let me also be grateful express my gratitude for the presentation that the Statistician General made to this committee. Chair, the first question I have is for the SG, is where is all this data stored? Is it stored with infrastructure that belongs to the sovereign, or is it stored offshore? And how do we protect this sovereign data? Because in my thinking, I would think that data of this nature is sovereign. The second thing is that with the function that the Statistician General and Statistics SA perform, are there any plans to position the organization as a central source of critical data for government? An example of that is that there are a lot of centers of data where South Africa is concerned. Data for health would be stored with the Department of Health, criminal or the Administration of Justice data would be kept with various centers, correctional services, South African police services, the the court system, etc. I feel that perhaps we need to have a one-stop shop for data. And perhaps that is a could play such a role, since they are the ones who are responsible for enumerating and producing data that is untainted by this or that, whether political or otherwise. Excuse me, Chair. I wanted to find out if there are plans to move to that direction where Status A becomes the crucible of all primary data on various aspects of South Africa, so that we have a one-stop shop if we want data, including on any person. Although that may be argued that perhaps Home Affairs would be much more better positioned where individual data is concerned, but we need a central place. The third thing I want to speak to, Chair, is that in relation to the mode of getting this data, and I'm raising this because of what I saw on the video, that was the clip that was played at the end of the presentation. I saw enumerators crossing streams or a river, almost in a very unsafe manner. And this begs the question about the logistical safety of the enumerators themselves in the mode of transportation they use to access the most remote. And I think I picked up where the SG said that enumerators were subjected to conditions that the people who live in those areas are subjected to. But I'm just concerned that due to the nature of the project and the fact that also labor laws would apply, ensuring the safety of those who are in the employ of the Status A, even on a contract basis, what measures are intended to be taken moving forward to ensure that enumerators are not exposed to risks and occupational dangers in carrying out their function? What is the age group average of the enumerators? Does the SG know what was the age group average of these enumerators? And how were they selected? What criteria was used to select these enumerators? And I want to close my comments, Chair, with the following comment that yesterday, we were in Parliament passing the Basic Education Laws Amendment Bill. And our experience throughout that process of public engagement with that particular bill exposed some underlying issues within our society, South Africa. And that the Rainbow Nation dream is exactly that. It's a dream. And I reflect on this, juxtaposing it with what the results that are presented by the Statistician General on the Western Cape in particular seem to be telling. The story that it seems to tell is that depending on the demographic of the enumerators, access to certain communities might have been denied for the purposes of the exercise of conducting census. And if the case is as I surmise, then it means we have bigger problems than we could have imagined. In the social cohesion project, in building a nation state of patriotic people who have no regard for race or creed or color or gender, but appreciate one another for being South African. If the story that is being told by this portion around the undercount, that one of the reasons would have been access, and access in specific communities, then it worries me. It then means, Chair, we need to undertake as government a process to realize the real Rainbow Nation that we speak of so much. Because it cannot be that 29 years down the line, we are still living the horrors of the past in nuanced ways. That is unacceptable. In relation to the next census, Slalo, as the last question, what are the plans to mitigate the potential rise in costs? We must be grateful that the estimate would have been 6.6 billion on this current census, but 3.2 billion was spent, with a saving of 3.4 billion, which is appreciated in the context of the austerity measures we find ourselves faced with. But what are the plans on the part of StatsSA to mitigate future rises in costs on some of the high expenditure items that make up the success of the project census? Thank you very much, Slalo.
Thank you, Honorable Yabo. Honorable Mbele.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to all the colleagues and everyone on the platform. Please allow me to keep my camera off. My network is unstable this morning. Just a quick and short question from my side in terms of one or two of the key results emanating from the census. It showed that, so there's been an increase in the growth rate with each passing census. It started at 10.5, and then the next census showed 15% growth, population growth since the last one. And now we're sitting at almost 20%. I think it was 19.5. And what I'm trying to sort of resolve in my head is that it's been my understanding from some other figures I saw in the past year or two that our birth rate as a country has been declining for at least about, I think it was 7 or 8 to 10 years. So am I correct in understanding that the increase in the population growth rates, not just the nominal increase, but the growth rate increase, is predominantly due to in-migration, if our birth rates has then been decreasing? I'm sorry to ask this a technical question, but it was the first thing that sort of jumps to me of trying to resolve that seeming paradox. If StatsSA has any insights or clarity for that. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mbele. Honorable Manyi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just Yeah, sorry. Thank you, Chairperson. I just got a few questions here. Sorry, Chairperson, I'm double booked here with another plenary on the other side. But briefly, I want to welcome the report by State SA. I think it's a great report, well detailed and all of that. We really welcome it. It's very professionally done. And I can see that a lot of professional wherewithal is brought to bear. I really appreciate that. I must appreciate that. And I also appreciate the fact that they have given those gadgets to, and I don't know when you say gadgets, what exactly does that mean? Is it laptops? Is it iPads? What exactly is that? Not that it's a question, but just mention that I think it's useful to make it very clear what exactly that is and whether those people given to them were in the space where there's electricity for them to be able to recharge those particular gadgets. But otherwise, I think if the gesture is also a very welcome gesture that must be commended. And then, Chairperson, I've got a couple of questions here. One, obviously, my backbone is this issue of Black African. And I note that the SG makes reference to Employment Equity Act of 1998, which clarified how Parliament has resolved the matter. And it's very clear to me that the SG does not want to take guidance from Parliament because Parliament's Employment Equity Act is an act passed by this Parliament. Parliament has decided that Blacks shall mean Africans, colored and Indians. So clearly the SG does not want the direction from Parliament. It's doing its own thing and is coming up with something that does not exist anywhere in this country and calls it Black African because of the whatever focus groups he has had wherever. So I continue to reject the explanation by the SG, and I continue to appeal to the SG to use the law as it currently obtains, and all those people that have got issues with the law as it currently obtains, there are processes to amend laws. Up until the laws are amended, they need to be applied as they stand. So that really should be the line. I don't think we should be engaging on a fruitless debate on the matter here and views and opinions when we've got a law that is very clear on this matter. So the SG must just apply the law and not his discretion. The independence of the SG does not extend to independence to undermine the laws of this country. I think to continue to say Black African is actually undermining the laws of this country. Leave alone my opinion, the law of this country does not have, so we can't have the SG that is going to be coming up with all kinds of frivolous reasons why the law must be undermined. So I reject that. Then to move on, Chair, I just wanted to understand as well, what was the target? Because I see when the SG qualifies the fact that he's unqualified report was better than what was there before. What was the target? Was the department aiming to get an unqualified report, or was the department aiming for a clean audit report? What exactly was the target here? I was not sure whether it was a target to beat what happened in 2011 or was the target clean audit. What exactly was it? I know what was achieved was unqualified audit, but what was actually, what was the department aiming for? And then, Chairperson, in these previous discussions and all of that, in the issue of the observations or recommendations by the AGSA, the issue of irregular expenditure is an issue. And I know the part about the expenditure because of timeline issues, COVID, and all of that. But in the AG's report, there's an additional issue of 250 million that was spent without following processes. I just needed a bit more explanation on that. I know that some of other officials in the previous engagement said something about this, but maybe the SG can just pronounce on this once and for all. And then, Chair, on the issue of the gadgets that apparently had to be sourced and were not available anywhere and all of that, I wanted to just check what exactly are these gadgets? I mean, what is it that these gadgets could do, which an app in a normal laptop or iPad or what you call this thing, tablet could not do? Why couldn't we just get an app as opposed to trying to get a physical gadget? I'm just not sure what exactly was the issue here, that we could not do something because we could not procure a gadget. I mean, why couldn't you get an app? I'm not for sure. Maybe I don't understand these things very well. Maybe the SG can explain. And then the issue of access to electricity and access to water, I'm going to ask information which probably is available and probably not flighted on the presentations, because the presentations by nature will be limited. But I think the issue of South Africa is an issue of transformation. And we know that South Africa has been a country where the oppression was based on race. So I would be interested if this covered anywhere in the report, if this G can point us exactly to where that is in the report, or we must be supplied this information. I want to know the access to I don't want this global amount about access to electricity and water. I want it granularized by race, because if I look at the TV today, not any other time, today, the only people that are still struggling with water are Africans. So I'm interested to know the access to water and electricity by race, so that I know that Africans in particular, their problems are being addressed. I mean, if you go to Limpopo, there are still people today that are still sharing water with animals as we speak, you know. If you go to the Eastern Cape today, you still have all kinds of things about water problems, even KZN, for that matter. So this global figure can be misleading. So I'm interested to know by race what has been the access to water. What else is there? Yeah, I think that's it for me, Chair. So those are the issues for me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Manyi. Thank you for your contribution. Honorable Piri. Honorable Piri.
Thanks, Chair, and sorry for the delay. You know, technology is something else. Chair, maybe, you know, sometimes I keep on repeating one thing, Chair. I want to plead with yourself. You know, I have a serious problem when we are in a portfolio and we feel it's about myself. As a member of parliament, given the mandate by my constituency, I don't speak for myself. When I speak, I need to request responses for South Africans to understand. When I speak, it must not be me, I. When I speak, it must not be a referral of saying, you know, my thinking is, let's talk on behalf
point of
our
constituency. Point of order, Chair.
Okay, Honorable Piri, just hold, Honorable Manyi.
Yeah, Chairperson, I would request that members of parliament that are here must address the agenda on that we're dealing with, and not try to address other members of parliament. When we come here, we take an oath of office in our personal capacity. I, Mzwanele Manyi, swear to the constitution and all of that. So I'm not going to be lectured here about how I must carry out my responsibilities. So I would ask that the member must just address the agenda and not try to do some undercooked workshop here. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Manyi. I was going to ask Honorable Piri if she was referring to any particular member, because she didn't mention any name in her contribution. I hear your point of order. Perhaps it seems to have been rushed to raise that while she was trying to make a point. I'm going to allow her to continue the point that she was making, and perhaps you can clarify the concern you have. Honorable Piri?
May I call a point of order?
Yes, Honorable Tobias?
Chair, I'm calling a point of order on Honorable Manyi, so that, you know,
unfortunately, last week she was referring at people as emotional, you know. And my understanding is that emotions, all of us have, unless if we have, we lack consciousness, then we will not have emotions. We also need to understand that point of order cannot be frivolous. There's no rule in the rule book that says a member can't refer to another member. So as you, I did not hear you ruling him out of order. So he is out of order. So please, Chair. Honorable Piri has the right to refer to anybody. There's no rule book that, or any clause in the rule book that prohibits her from doing that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Tobias. Honorable Manyi rose on a point of order. So as a chair, I would not have ruled him out of order. The issue I would have done would not to sustain his point of order, which I have not. And so I hear the points you're making, but I've already attended to the matter and I was giving Honorable Piri the space to continue a contribution because Honorable Piri did not mention Honorable Manyi or any member. She's making a contribution and she's allowed to make a contribution in the manner that she feels, unless it's an issue of a personal attack that I can come in as a chair. So maybe allow me to hand over to Honorable Piri to continue with her contribution.
Thank you, Chair. Can I continue? I had like the someone else who wants to come in.
Go ahead, Honorable Piri.
Thanks, Chair. As I continue, I always plead with yourself for a workshop, Chair, so that all of us, we understand and know what is our roles as members of parliament and as we represent our constituencies. As I continue, Chair, the workshop is very important. It will even give us the insight and know how to scrutinize even reports and not just speak from the common sense. But Chair, when the should fit you, it's fine, but I've never referred to anyone. I even included myself for all of us. But Chair, I felt on a lighter note, but I'm not intimidated. I felt like I'm attacked personally, but that one I can handle. I'm a big girl, that's why I'm a member of parliament. Chair, as I proceed to the presentation, I'll go straight to the presentation. I've observed, or in terms of your presentation, SG, the uses of technology that has reduced your cost by around 6.6 billion. And if undertaken in a traditional method, so which is saving you over 2.2 billion, and it demonstrates the potential impact of the digitalization. But Chair, on that point on its own, as they must be happy to be safe, my question will be, Chair, to that, as we are legislators and the country is faced with unemployment, I want to understand from the SG, what risk exists for the SA staff as it transitions to a more digitalized system, which can result in a certain post being redundant and technological system can assist with data collection and data analysis. It then touches the issue of unemployment. And therefore, when we want to address unemployment, then we're also, others are losing their jobs. Secondly, Chair, in my observation, is that you even most of the members have covered me, but I want to also emphasize it, the migration that we are seeing in the population growth, in particular with Western Cape and Gauteng. So you know it's a worrisome bit factor that you need to. We need to understand the transitional plan that they have, because you need to reskill the staff. You must also beef up the staff as much as there's an issue of technology. What are the plans in place by the SG and the team to deal with the migration part? While I'm still on the migration, Chair, you have illegal immigrants. In their slides, they mentioned countries where you see there's an influx of Zimbabweans, there's an influx of Botswanans and others, but I don't see in their slide a small and a portion where they speak about the Jewish, not forgetting, and we are not saying here we must talk about the recent issue that is happening in Palestine and Israel. I don't want to get to that, but I'm saying I've never seen a slide where we are shown how far, how many Palestinians are in the country, considering what is happening currently. And my last point, as I learned, Chair, it will be the observation that the major donation that was made by SAFSA to schools, you know, the interest that I had on the last slide by the SG seeing Ziela Kwala. On the Ziela Kwala, on the other side, there's a young child holding a tablet, which shows that we are in a technological country or a space, and that child is wearing an apron and a tag, so which there's an excitement. And then it tells you, meaning they've donated, but I want to check the programs. In terms of your donation to those tablets to schools, how do you then monitor whether they are utilized effectively, or you just donate and leave? Or do you have a specific program that you want to achieve as SSA, or you want to influence kids at school? So I need to get the understanding of what is it that you want to achieve at the end when you donate those major tablets. And you know, we are happy, and South Africans must know you are giving back, and you need to dwell much and speak to us about that program, which is a good program, Chair. And I also want to acknowledge and accept the report with the explanation that Black Africans, for now, in terms of the Labour Act, there is no other way, but currently we must accept we are proudly Black Africans residing in South Africa. Chair, I want to make a recommendation to the portfolio and to the SA. In order to increase the usage of the census data, SAFSA should develop more sectoral reports that analyze various correlation at a national and provincial level. And Chair, the development district development model that focuses on SAFSA report must be expedited. Thanks, Chair. Let me land here.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Piri, for your contribution and those recommendations. Thank you. SG and your team, you would have taken copious notes from all the inputs by the members. They would have commented either way, whether it is commending your work or with a critique. Questions would have been asked and clarities, and there would have been areas of contestation as raised. So I now want to give the opportunity back to you. You will then determine with your team, basically you are the conductor of the orchestra, as to who will sing which tune in your team. I hand over to you.
Thank you indeed, Chairperson. Let me say that I'm going to ask...
But I know when you can't sing, but you can be a conductor.
Thank you indeed, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of Parliament. I must admit we really appreciate this engagement, because some of these engagements or the things that are being raised, particularly those that deal with questions around the veracity of our data, are matters that the members of the public have always asked since Census 1996. and do assist us in staying firm that our numbers can stand the test of time and our numbers are reliable. So, but one thing that I want us, we will deal with them one by one. I would like Yandi to deal with some of the questions. We have all written the questions. And then those that are not covered, I will deal with. There is Calvin as well in relation to other issues. There is Ntavi, particularly Ntavi, on the issue of the Northern Cape undercount that Honorable McLua raised versus the other provinces. I think Ntavi is a person who is well-placed. There is also Bruce on the over expenditure and what we need to do. Bruce, you may cover as well the whole issue of capacitation for future. And then I will deal with the rest. But just as a matter of interest, before I hand over to the colleagues, Chair, and of course, we'll deal with questions raised by Honorable Piri. We usually don't ask from the census the ethnicity. So when we go to whether which country you come from, we don't ask, say you say you are from Zimbabwe, whether you are Kalanga, you are Ndebele, or you are Zizeru, or what. We ask which country you're from. So it's the same when you say you are from Congo DRC. We don't ask if you are Lingala or Malawi, if you are Chewa, Lingala, or any other. We just ask which country you are from. So those countries that we have made available are the top five countries. But specifically on what she has asked, people that said they were from Pakistan were 15,000. And people who said they were from Israel were 890, without saying whether they are Jew or otherwise. They just said where they are from. And that's where we end it. Because then the coding for all the ethnic groups in the entire world, plus beyond ethnic groups, their languages and dialect, and some even attach dialect to almost like ethnic group. So, but we'll deal with her other questions in detail. So Yandi, Calvin, Bruce, and Tavi, and Bruce in that quick order.
Thank you very much, SG. Good morning, honorable members. I will just switch on my camera for just greetings, and then I will go into answering the questions when I switch off. I will start with Honorable Play on where and how will this information be filtered into municipalities. We are busy with provincial launches. There was a national launch on the 10th of October, and we started provincial launches as from last week. And beyond the province, we then go into districts and then into local municipalities. And we are also preparing a tool that we call Supercross that local municipalities can use to be able to do their own data analysis or to access census data through that tool. And this tool is going to be ready in about, I think, from the 7th of November. On the 1st of November, it will be available for internal use to just check that everything is fine. Then we make it public on the 7th of November. To Honorable McGlower on the reliability of the results, they actually went through all of the quality measures that we had to undergo, including in-built validation checks. And on top of this, we also had to validate the data that we have by looking at the National Population Register and other registers such as from the IEC to see if the numbers that we're getting are credible. And on top of that, you also had independent consultants who looked at the various stages of the census count, the entire statistical value chain from planning to data analysis to the post-enumeration survey. So we had independent consultants who were looking at this, that the SJ has already said that the Stats Council then got to say that the results were fit for use. So there's a lot of quality checks that we did, and one of them being the post-enumeration survey, which my colleague Ntabi will talk to on what we did in the post-enumeration survey, which we looked at the net coverage to see if what an account is. We looked at content coverage, which Ntabi will go into. But in terms of those that we missed Another question from Honorable Pillay. Those that we missed are accounted for, but my colleague in Tabu will talk to that. And then I go to the question on, from Honorable Mbele, on the increase in the population growth, that yes, it's caused by immigration as well as by births. While the births have been declining, they still contribute to the population rising at the levels that you talked to. And my other question is on electricity from Honorable Manye. Electricity and water access by population group. This is information that we can avail, but we do know that households that are headed by people of the white population group, they're the ones who have more access to electricity and light and electricity as well as water access. But we can share these numbers as soon as we are done with that analysis. And on Honorable Piri, on most sectoral reports at national and provincial level, yes, ma'am, we are busy with that. We are going to be writing sector-specific reports. We have a report on education that will be coming, that will be looking at different levels from national to province to district. We are writing a report on disability. It's another sector that is specific that we are going to be writing on. We are writing reports on gender statistics that we are getting from the census, looking at a whole range of things from household headship to access to certain items like TV, internet, and so on. So we're busy with the sector-specific reports, but they will not be coming like now. I think we'll start publishing them by the end of the financial year. Thank you, SG, and I give over to you.
Calvin will be followed by Ntavi, and then Bruce will come after Ntavi. In that quick order, please.
Thank you a lot, SG, and let me also extend my greetings to honorable members. I would also switch off my camera so that I could then respond with ease to the questions on the table. Let me rather start with the one of tablets. Our donation to the Department of Provincial Departments of Education, we were not donating directly to schools because we do not have the education program that they are running in each province. However, what we had also included in our MOU was that provinces, as they receive the tablets, they need to confirm that they do have programs to utilize these gadgets, and therefore they won't be stored in another storeroom instead of being distributed to relevant schools and pupils. And we have subsequently been engaging with them, and a number of education departments across the provinces have been distributing these tablets to schools that are already on their e-learning programs. And of course, we have been part of then those kind of handovers as and when they happen. And I think I must affirm that all provinces have indeed received some donation in this regard. So in terms of the educational program, we do not enter that space, that is the space for education. But that, of course, which we were concerned about is to ensure that they are not then received and then stored into a warehouse, but rather let them involve us when they then further distribute them to schools and those programs continue to be undertaken. I think there was also the question as to why did we have to rather consider a tablet as compared to just an app. In terms of the tablets is that we have much better control, one of what are the rather apps that we can therefore avail on the tablet, and what are the restrictions, therefore, we can also put on those tablets, which was very important to do to ensure that our field staff do not, therefore, venture into prohibited sites and the like. So the tablets were configured such that only certain applications could actually work thereof. We couldn't ask individuals to rather use their personal phones or tablets as we brought them on board, because it would have then meant that in addition we needed to avail connectivity in the form of data. But also the flow of the questionnaire on a cell phone as compared to a tablet, it is not so easy to then navigate. And we wouldn't have full control and monitoring of individual cell phones, because those are individual gadgets. But within SPSSA, we were therefore with the tablets, be in a position to monitor each tablet on a daily basis. But equally, when there was a need for us to then remotely control that tablet, would then through, of course, our MDM then issue instructions for a particular tablet to either cease working, or we wipe the information of that tablet if it has actually been misplaced. So in terms of then answering whether there is electricity where we have donated these tablets, for the schools that have received to date, where we have been invited by the various Department of Education across the country, indeed there is electricity, and some do even have a backup energy support in this regard. There was a question as well on what was the average age for our field staff. We had targeted that 50% of our field staff will be between the ages of 20 to 35. We can affirm that when we ran the census, we had over 85% who fell within the category of youth. There was also the question on what could have been the reasons for dropouts. Indeed, what we have seen is that the main dropouts came from people who were students. As then universities started opening, quite a number of potential field workers, because they needed now to relocate where they are attending school, then led to those dropouts. But when we started with our training, we also saw a few number of maybe whites and Indians as well come into our training, when then they realized, the amount of work that is involved vis-a-vis the salaries that we're offering, we saw a very high number of dropouts in that category of persons. I think we, in the main, were left with majority blacks and, of course, colors in this regard. And I think it is something that indeed is not unique to the 2022 census. We have seen in high-wealth areas, even in the past, we were struggling to get rather field workers to do the kind of work that we do have. I think there was also the issue of what measures have we taken for safety of our field staff. One of the things that maybe I should start with the criteria first that we used for selection. One of the criteria that we used for selection was a minimum of a metric for field workers, but we also preferred to appoint people within their areas of residence to avoid a lot of travel, but also to rather benefit from them being familiar with their area and possibly accepted by the communities, because they do have a good standing in communities. But we also had their credentials checked through SAPS, where we were doing vetting, so that we are sure that we are not sending people who are not in good standing in society to ask personal information from households. Then in addition to that, we also had learner management systems, where after providing training to this potential field staff, they had to sit for tests on various modules. And of course, those that then achieved above 60% were then given the opportunity to then be field workers in the project. But as we have seen a number of dropouts at some point, we also had to then reduce the pass, or rather, yes, the pass rate to 50 to rather cater for the dropouts that we had seen. But for supervisors, in addition to that, we wanted people who could also drive, so that when there is a need, especially with a dispersed enumeration areas, they could be in a position to work as a team moving from one area to the other. And then in terms of safety, one of the other issues that we have done was always presented at the net joints, as well as the prof joints, where security cluster was fully informed of our activities, but our field workers themselves with the supervisory levels, as and when they visited an area, the first point of reporting was at the local police station, so that then the police would assist in this regard. Of course, in relation to crossing rivers, those we were not, we did not rather foresaw that, and when those incidents happen in KZN, we did even had to take a break in those areas that were affected by floods, until such that the areas were much easier to be covered or traversed by our field staff. I think those would be the ones that I've noted through you, Chairperson. I would hand over back to the Statistician General. Thank you.
Thank you, Calvin. Tavi, you come in and you will be followed by Bruce.
Thank you, Chair. And good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. Allow me to switch on my video for the purpose of greeting honorable members in this meeting. And as I delve into the question that was asked by honorable McClure, I'll then switch off my camera. Chair, the question that was asked by honorable McClure dealt with the undercount rates for Northern Cape as we compare this province to what transpired in the Free State and the Northwest. At this point, we'd like to share that because of the landmass in the Northern Cape and the remoteness of the farms in the Northern Cape, we observe that this is what largely contributed to the higher undercount rates of the Northern Cape as compared to First State and Northwest. If I could briefly share that when we look at persons, the Northern Cape undercounts for persons in farm areas, it was around 61.8%. Meanwhile, in the First State and Northwest, for the same areas, that is farms in First State and Northwest, the undercount rate for persons is around the 20%. When we look at the farms, the households that reside in farms, we'll then see that for all three provinces, they are actually showing same or similar patterns of how we have counted in those areas where we observe that the undercount rate for households that live in farm areas, the undercount rates were around 38%. So largely, we see that the reason for the higher than a normal or average undercount rate in Northern Cape is largely due to difficulties of counting persons that lived in farm areas in this province as compared to the Free State and the Northwest. I'll stop at that, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ntavi. I had skipped as well, Chairperson, just to deal with the use of data and particularly what we can do. So as well, if you come in before we deal with governance matters from Bruce.
Thanks, SG. I was just concerned that I might not earn my lunch if the committee was going to give us lunch later. Just on the issue of Supercross, Yandi mentioned it. With the last census, we did training to parliamentarians. It's about a 2 to 3 hour training, so everyone can attend, not just the researchers. And if you click the mouse and you drag race, you click the mouse and you drag water, and then you've got your table. So Chair SG, if we could, I suggest that we try to make those arrangements as soon as Supercross is available, that we can bring it to Parliament, we install it on people's laptops, on their computers, and then they can have this data for themselves, in addition to the researchers there. Then on the issue of one-stop shop for all data, during COVID, we started the process of what's called the National Policy Data Observatory. That was a partnership between StatsSA, SARS, and Department of Science and Technology. And so we made sure that all the decisions during COVID was based on evidence, and it contained StatsSA's data, but all other data, including private sector data at the time, that informed our COVID decision. So the National Policy Data Observatory is still active, Chair. And so as we move forward, that in some ways will become our one-stop shop. It's hosted on the infrastructure by the High Performance Computing Center. So it's active, it's working, we've got dashboards. I think those are the only two things. Thanks, SG.
Thank you, Ashwell. Let's allow Bruce, and then after Bruce, I will come in.
Okay, good morning, honorable members and colleagues. I'll switch off my video as well. The last time we'll wear the Springbok jersey. Tomorrow, let's hope we beat the All Blacks. Chair, just quickly, and Honorable Pillay asked about the 825 million over expenditure and whether that could have been reduced. The challenges we have is that was largely due to the extension of the field work, so it related to payments of field workers and vehicles and then all the related expenditure. So as much as the minute provinces were concluded, the reverse logistics kicked in. So what happened is that in an effort to reduce costs, vehicles were returned as soon as possible, and all other reverse logistics. We had quite a big exercise in getting the tablets back to Gauteng, and that was a massive exercise where we had Gauteng Education Department assist, and then we also had our own security unit collecting tablets countrywide, and then they had to then be repackaged and scanned, and then when the handovers get done to the various education departments, you can imagine the volume that we had to process. So that was a massive reverse logistics exercise as well. That was also part of these costs. The comment that we Honorable Mani asked about unqualified, whether that was a target. The ideal is to have a clean audit opinion, but I think the slide was just to indicate that when you have a project of this magnitude, you are bound to have areas in which there are challenges or non-compliance issues, and the census illustrated that this census, but we are busy dealing with the irregular expenditure. And also investigating that, and then engagements with National Treasury. We've indicated that National Treasury is still busy with a review report, and that should be coming out in the coming week or two, where they've done a review of the census expenditures, while including the over expenditure. So we'll await that report. But we've also indicated that we are in engagements with the AG, and they will be monitoring our action plans to actually conclude on those cases that we've identified as irregular and fruitless and wasteful. So with the census, in addition to the normal work, we have a massive spike in invoices on the procurement side, a massive spike in incidents of vehicle accidents, and all those form part of these governance processes where they need to be investigated and concluded. I just wanted, in terms of Honorable Piri asking, what happens when we move, when we start digitizing our processes? That's already started, and we're busy reviewing our skills development strategy to align it to our digital transformation agenda, and especially specifically to realign this to skills for the future. So I've indicated, I think at Scopa last week, there's no retrenchment in government. And what we do is that whoever's affected gets reskilled, identified, and gets reskilled as part of a placement program within the organization. So the process also for the unauthorized that we had followed, and you'd recall at the time of the census, we had all these natural disasters, and we had requested through the funding processes for additional funding from National Treasury from about mid-March already, February, when we extended the census. But due to all the competing priorities, funding priorities, our application to have additional funding at that time, around about June, July, was then unsuccessful. But we did receive the rollover as outlined in the presentation. Just to give an indication, we've employed over 114,000 field workers and field work supervisors. And we unfortunately had 15 deaths during that period. And only one was work-related in a vehicle accident. The rest were either due to illness, unfortunately, and some societal incidents like unnatural deaths outside of the work environment. So those are the challenges we had. The issue of transversing rivers, as you had indicated to us that at the time when you became aware of that. Especially with the flooding in the KZN, those activities be put on hold until it was safe for field workers to continue data collection in those areas. In terms of the dropout reasons, Honorable Magluwa, we don't have the detail per province at this stage, but university students, and I think Calvin might have touched on it, we started in January, when Varsity only opens in February, March, but when the census was extended, they obviously then had to go back to university. And then also resignations where people were unemployed had already had some application in progress, and then they resigned to seek other permanent employment. We employed 85% of the contract staff were youth between the ages of 20 to 35. Our initial target was 50%, so that was exceeded. We will, in terms of the youth that was employed, also had to be unemployed. So that was also the criteria. You would have cases where people were trying to seek employment that were working for other departments, but that has been dealt with. So you do have unusual cases coming through as well. But in terms of the unauthorized expenditure, as engaged in the first meeting on the 13th, is that we will be preparing for Scopa in collaboration with NT, with National Treasury and the review, and also obviously with the AG's assessment of our action plans to deal with the irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure as well. Chair, I think I've covered everything. Thank you.
Thank you indeed, Bruce. Let me deal with some of the questions, and some of them, Chairperson, I may have to repeat in the way my colleagues have dealt with them. There is an issue of raised by Honorable Pillay, and I'll take it up again further when it, Honorable McClure and others raise it, whether the undercount includes, I mean, the people that we missed are included in the final count. Indeed, yes, they are included. In that when we have an undercount, and the undercount should not be an issue that we are much more worried or we focus on. And I need to put the process of how we deal with it, which is in line with what Honorable McClure is raising. And so I'll combine both this issue of the undercount on both Honorable McClure and Honorable Pillay. But there's one thing that Honorable McClure is raising, that it's very important, and even in the way we communicate as statisticians ourselves, that the notion of a correct data or reliable and accurate data is carried forward. And because these points that he's raising, Honorable McClure, these are the points that members of the public who are not aware of what we are dealing, including some members in the academia, are not aware how we deal with these matters of the undercount. So firstly is that the undercount, we were not caught, Chairperson and Honorable Members, by somebody out there that we released census results and somebody went to do another population census and said Status SA has missed how many people, which is the undercount. We ourselves as Status SA made the undercount available. We published it. And we publish it for demonstrating that our processes are transparent. One is that over and above the collection rate, where we were saying the collection rate was highest in the Free State, 98% and 86% in the Western Cape. When we go to a household, Chairperson, we do not know, like a dwelling unit, because our first point of call, before we know how many people are in a household, is a dwelling a unit. So when we knock at the door, we do not know whether we will find a person in that house or in that dwelling unit. We also do not know whether there will be a refusal. We do not know whether there will be, this is a vacant or and unoccupied, but we document these things. If the roofs have fallen down and everything, we record it that it's unoccupied. And if the neighbors assist us and tell us, but nobody stays there, we record it. But by mere looking, I mean, there's another country which said, if you don't find anybody, and you find that the doors are locked and there's a cat inside the house or there's a dog inside the house, it means somebody stays there. So, but when we knock, we do not know. We also do not know whether we will find in the same house three households. So we do unpacking. So we might arrive there and think we'll find all the people in that dwelling unit eating from the same pot, only to find that there are five rooms. Two of the rooms eat from the same pot. The other three rooms eat on their own account. Then we start unpacking. So after that, when we conduct the post-enumeration survey, we compare record for record. That is why a post-enumeration survey must do what we call reconciliation visits again and again until we are satisfied that we have accounted for everyone. Once we have accounted, then we compare record for record at persons, at age, at sex, at farming settlement types, be it farms, informal settlements, suburbs, and the like. Then we come out with the undercount. Now, that is, we are one of the few countries that are as transparent as that. Other countries, when they conduct a post-enumeration survey, they don't even publish their undercount. We publish it. But when they have published it, and there is an issue about it's very high or very low. In our case, the United Nations doesn't give guidelines on what is a high undercount. All they want you to know is if you conduct it, know what it is. Then we adjust, and this is a point that Honorable Pillay asks. Once we have counted everyone and we know the undercount, then we adjust. So that is the final count of 62 million. It's one, the number of people that we have reached. Two, the number of people that we have missed. And different undercounts in different provinces means that the adjustments will be different. Different undercounts within a province for sex, for age, or age cohorts, for settlement types will be different. And then we adjust for that. Then we take populations from institutions, those that are in correctional centers, academic centers, hostels, lists from the hotels. And then we also include the homeless, because those ones are not in a dwelling unit. And we have actually those that are homeless in the open space or are in the shelter. We can already say those that are in the shelter are the highest in the Western Cape than anywhere in the country. Then we add them and we come with the final population. But as we do so, we look at the population register, we look at patterns from previous censuses. For example, in census 1996, the young white male was the most missing because they were in single household establishment. And if you can't reach them, you can't reach them. 2001, young white male and children 0 to 5 were missing. We had to actually adjust for them once we get adjustment factors. And then in 2011, children under the age of 5 were missing, and single household members, regardless of race, were missing. We had to adjust for them. And in this regard, as we say, it went all over into settlement type and all the areas we have adjusted. So the final count of 62 million does adjust and takes into account the people that we have missed. Now, Honorable McGlua also makes a point that, you see, with this high undercount, then you have what's that data that is not reliable or unreliable. And of course, these are things that we must deal with in the public. But let me assure this committee that the data is reliable. It has an undercount, and we have adjusted, and we explain in our reports, both in the census as well as the post-enumeration survey report. All the consultants, those that assisted and worked with StatsSA on different variables, as well as consultants that work with council, all of them were unanimous that the data is reliable and fit for purpose. If it was not reliable and fit for purpose, we would not have released it ourselves. We would have had to go to the nation in shame and say, we are not releasing it. There are countries that have in the past failed to release census results. Nigeria is one of them. We have never had such an experience here in South Africa. But these are things that members of the public are also raising. And I want us to handle them, and not only here in Parliament. We will continue handling them, that the census is fit for purpose. And there's a statement that was released by Council in relation to that. Honorable McGlua also raises a question. What are we going to do in terms of COVID disasters and unrest? Maybe not much unrest, but disasters will always be there, and pandemics will always be there, to make sure that we conduct a better census. One of the things we must appreciate about the South African census is that there are countries, the United States ran their census just before COVID, but Alaska gave them problems. So that you will always miss people. Sometimes in large scale, it's always the case the world over. A census, while it's a complete count, you don't reach out to everyone. That is why the United States, like us, are some of the countries that conduct an under post-enumeration survey for an undercount. The British ran their census, but they are much more sophisticated than us. The Americans, since way back 1870, they send forms and the forms are returned. They still do that today. They are paper-based. The British went electronic and digital. And in the process of that, we ourselves, this census is the only census in the world that was run right in the middle of COVID-19 in an environment which is not similar like the British, which is a developed nation with access to technology and everything, in an environment that has semblance of a developed world in our big cities and less developed areas in our rural areas. And it will become one, a basis for scholarly research, as well as in our country and beyond. But in our case, in future, we know, and this census has taught us a lot in terms of planning, because we could never have planned for COVID. It was like repairing an aeroplane while you are flying. Every day we woke up to a different surprise. The president didn't have to consult us when he had to lock down the country at highest levels. He had to deal with the health issue. The floods just happened. The unrest, they happened, and we had to deal with that. And on the issue that what we will do, technology will compensate a lot more for us. And there's a point, Honorable Yabo, that he raises, that the logistical safety of field workers, and I'm taking from Honorable McGlua on disasters and the like, I must admit, I got quite scared and worried when I saw our field workers crossing rivers and streams, because it's not like they were forced. They were so field workers across the country. There was a lady who was robbed at gunpoint of the tablet she was carrying in Pietermaritzburg. Yandi and I were there. We met her and we said, you are not going back there tomorrow. We are going to make sure that we find a way of having to get we ourselves as the leadership to lead a team to go there. She said, I'm going back there. I have a young son to feed, and this is the only job I've ever had in my lifetime. And I will not be intimidated. Of course, we convinced them not to go. So people were not forced, but I, as accounting officer, when you see these footages, when you see people, they could have been snatched by a crocodile or anything. We've stopped instantly in those parts, not only in KwaZulu-Natal. The Northwest was affected. Actually, I was there when staff members were actually going on donkey carts, and there were risks they could be hurt. So we had to stop some field work and say, how do we compensate? And in KwaZulu-Natal, we had to stop for 2 weeks and go back to field. And we had to send our leadership, as well Gineka, who spoke here, had to go there and lead the team to deal with disasters and turn the situation around when they are better so that we can go into field. So it is critical that we take care of these kinds of issues. The rise in the cost for the next census, Honorable Yabo raises this matter. In the next census, one of the things that we hope, 10 years from now, the country will have so much moved. We will use technology in the form of artificial intelligence and all sorts of technology that may be there at the time. 1996, who knew that one day we would have smartphones that would make it easier, even if we don't have contact with the people instantly. Web-assisted, there was not much penetration of computers in 1996. So we'll take advantage of the technology at the time. But as all over the world, it has always been said, one of the consultants, Beckles, says to us, you know, there's always an assumption that when you go technology, you will cut costs. The first investment in technology are always very expensive. And we know it. When cell phones first arrived, we were paying a lot of money. 1996, cell phones were costing 10,000, 90, I mean 14,000. Today you can get a cell phone, you pay more for data. So these are issues that we're dealing with. Honorable Mbele Yandi has raised this issue. While indeed we are seeing a decline in fertility in our country, while the number of children born of a woman in a lifetime, a live birth is declining. But what is happening, the base, the number of women in a population of 40 million in 1996, you had lesser women who could give birth even if fertility was high. Now you have a population coming out of 2011, which was 55.8 million. The base is higher of the number of women that can give birth. Before you talk of those who are coming in as migrants, the base is higher than where we were in 1996. So while fertility is declining, the fact that the number of children that are born live births is from a higher base does happen. A good example is this. If we had, say, five women in 1996 as a base giving birth to four children, you would have 20 children born. So while your fertility is high, it's four in terms of four children live births. But say in between 2011 and 2022, you have eight women. And when you have eight women, not five women anymore, and each of them giving birth to three children, so your fertility has declined, but the number of children born would be 24. So you would see that there is actually an increase in the number of children, even when fertility is declining, when the base or the number of women is increasing. Of course, the other part is that our population, especially that of Gauteng, is not only driven by people coming from outside South Africa. Even people coming from other provinces, mainly Limpopo. It's the same with the Western Cape. The fertility for the Western Cape is not as high as that of the Eastern Cape. But people from the Eastern Cape, in 1996, they went there alone and they left the children in the Eastern Cape. What we are seeing now is that they move as an entire family and they stay there and their children grow up there. Whereas in Limpopo, it's young people who come here as students in Gauteng and they never leave and they finally settle and marry here. But 50% of people who come from outside South Africa choose Gauteng as their destination. And that talks to the point of what do we do in the use of data, which has been covered. But one of the things is we are going out to every province, we'll be going to the districts, we'll be addressing academia, schools, everywhere, including parliament, and we are now briefing parliament on the data. We are encouraging the use of data. Then the question is, how do they deal with this data once they have received it? And I'll come to that when I deal with what Honorable Piri raised. Honorable Manyi, I think the whole issue of the target, Bruce has on the audit, has raised that one. One of the things that Honorable Manyi keeps on raising is this issue of Black African, and which we, as let's say, and I know sometimes when we are directed by Parliament, it's like, go and change it now because the law says so. It's because when we came up with this matter, it was in 1996 of Black African. But our responsibility as a statistical agency is not only to look at the issues, it's to look at focus groups, how they are comfortable in answering questions. A good example, before we come to this one of race, is the one where you are dealing with whether you can ask people once they are here, were you born here or not. We meet with other countries, including we meet at the United Nations at an African level, and we test these issues, including focus groups and the like, to see how comfortable people can respond to our questions. And once we know, it means our responsibility is to make sure that we have the highest response rates in the way we ask questions. So certainly the point that Honorable Manyi is raising is a very sensitive one, in the space of the nation. That is why our constitution decided to remove it from referring to people as in black African, I mean black, as in colored African, Indian, and the like. It's not there in the constitution. It was a conscious issue. And it's again the issue that the National Population Register, our IDs no longer say whether we are white or black. But for purposes of employment equity, it had to be raised. But for us as statisticians, when we must report and assist the nation, we must make sure that we have more data points in the way people respond to questions. So this matter is ongoing. As I'm saying, while Honorable Mani says, obviously, you have to keep to the issue of colored as well. But the colored population group has already petitioned us more than once. That is why in the census, we had an option of other for the Khoi and the Sen to be able to classify themselves. The Portuguese people, the ambassador came to see us and said they want to know their population. Obviously, we could not address it that way. When we went into focus groups, the Portuguese could not make it as even much in the highly spoken languages. So the statistical processes, I really, really am listening to what Honorable Mani is raising. The statistical processes, when we deal with this matter, must make sure that, one, we don't breach theory. That is the reference of black African in 1990, there was even the Employment Equity Act. Even if one day we speak, we remove, link that data. If they can't link from previous link census, that data. If they can't link from previous censuses, we have broken theory, and it means we are not protecting future generations who will live even 100 years from now. So we have a responsibility to handle this matter steadily. Sometimes we run parallel surveys to check on what we call data stability, or if data shows instability in asking a question like this one. So this matter continues, and it's not only that. We used to have male, female. Now there's an issue of the sex that you are assigned at birth is something else. But there's also an issue of gender, the LGBTQI group that says, we want gender to be included. They raise it, and as they raise it, we don't just go and implement it. We have to put in place processes through which we check, and focus groups become a critical issue in the practice of official statistics. And we should not just throw them out of the window. So with other emerging issues, we continue to make sure that we don't breach theory and protect future generations going forward. I think on Honorable Mani, access to water and electricity has been addressed as being the black Africans and the colored in the main, the Indians and the Asians, not only in the census, the Indians and the whites. The Indians are actually catching up with the whites in all aspects, be it poverty, teenage pregnancy. The biggest challenge remains for black Africans and the colored. Honorable Phiri, what can be done with migration as regards Western Cape and Gauteng in relation to the plans to deal with this migration part? What we do is we make the data available and we engage with these provinces, but what gets done, we are not allowed by the law to proceed with that. We go as far as that point of making it available, because when you have a statistician who recommends what should be done, and it's known that we deal with numbers. That is why we are not allowed to enter the policy space. That is why the whole issue of independence also comes in, that we must release numbers equally without fear of prejudice. We must treat even users, whether it's the president or members of parliament or any member of the public, when they raise issues, we treat them as users equally. It doesn't stop away from accountability to the president or to members of parliament. We account certainly to yourselves, but when it's about the data, we have to treat members of the public equally like we treat anyone else. Now, in this regard, assume we were to say this is what needs to be done. And tomorrow...
I hope you're wrapping up now.
I'm wrapping up, yeah. We suggest what? This is what needs to be done. And Chair, once we suggest what needs to be done, and it happens that when we measure again, what we said must be done is not confirmed. We would shy away from making numbers available. And once we shy away, we would have actually lost our independence. And the independence of the methods is something we must uphold. Just on refusals, which is the last point, Honorable Manyi raised that, but also Honorable McLuhan touched it in passing. In terms of refusals, we don't capture them by race, because when we come to your household and we knock at the door, we talk to you. We do not know whether in your household you may stand there as a colored or as a black African at the door. But we do not know that the households you are representing, once we start unpacking in terms of persons, whether those people who you stay with are white, they are colored or otherwise. We only see you and when you tell us you don't want us. You don't want us in your yard, and some of them just throw the dogs at us. So we do not know. So we capture it at the household level, not at the person's level. That is why we won't know by race whether it's this population group that refused or not. But we can say that 1.2 million households refused to be enumerated. And the larger part of it was due to COVID-1. They said they can't trust strangers in their house. Other reasons they were giving is that they don't want anybody from government. And you have field workers there. They can't stand there and say, I insist, I want to count you. Because then they would be put at risk. And there are cases where our field workers would be put at risk, not even for this. But one thing we can say is that 686,546 households, that is slightly more than 500,000, were in Gauteng, those that refused. In the Western Cape, we had, which was the second one, 185,268 households refused in the Western Cape. In KwaZulu-Natal, it was 165,632. So we have them all the way to the Northern Cape. And in as regards, indeed, the future will look better. But let me assure you, Chairperson and Honorable Members, the numbers that we have released have been taken through a lot of quality checks and veracity checks and a lot of beating. They will stand the test of time. They are reliable and they are fit for purpose. And we would like to encourage members of the public, through yourselves as members of parliament, honorable members, that members of the public should use this data for planning, because council, which is independent of us, has also said so. I thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, SG Maluleke. Maybe just I saw the note from Honorable Tobias, just for a quick follow-up before we summarize.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, let me upfront declare that I'm not eligible to do sampling statistics, but I just need to clear my mind on one thing. First, I want to understand whether the post-enumeration report gets accredited by the United Nations so that we know the standing of this report. Second, I want to know how much budget was allocated for the Northern Cape enumeration and in what percentage terms was the undercounting specifically for the Northern Cape. Because I'm not sure how to get to miss people in the Northern Cape. It's a very unique province. So let's get more clarity so that we're clearer about what happened there. Thank you.
Thank you for that follow-up, Honorable Chair Bias. Another quick follow-up, Honorable Manyi.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Once again, Mzwanele Manyi here, an African without the prefix. I continue. At the Chair, I must apologize. I had jumped off to do a declaration elsewhere, so I didn't hear what the point of order of Ms. Tobias was after I had spoken. But be that as it may, I'm sure it would not have persuaded me to change my stance. My stance remained as articulated, but I'm moving on.
It was a small thing. It was not on substance. It was just small.
Okay. All right. I continue then, Chairperson, on that basis, that the issue of African, I continue to state that I hear the SG. I think his explanation this time around was much better than last time, but I still don't agree. I think that if that's what he did, is it now, can I therefore expect that me as an African without a prefix, am I included in the other, in the description? Where am I? Because I can't be lumped with the Black African. I'm not Black African, I'm just African without a prefix. So am I part of the other in these statistics, or did he make a call that he'll drag me kicking and screaming into the Black African categorization, which I continue to strongly object to? So I have a problem with this thing, Chairperson. I will continue to raise it. And on the response on the unqualified audit, indeed, the graph that was shown was a best of the worst slide. And the question that I needed just a straight answer on is, what was the target? I don't want to be told what is ideal. I just want to know, was Stats SA working towards a particular target, yes or no? If you're working towards a target, what was that target? Was clean audit your target, which you failed to meet, or was unqualified audit your target? Why is this difficult to answer? And then, Chairperson, I think one of the staff members there of the Stats SA responded to the issue of the access to electricity and water by race. And she said something about they are still analyzing that. They will give you the report because it's not apparently contained in the report. I actually thought maybe it is in the thick report and not in the presentation. But the response I got gave me the impression that it's not actually even in that report, but she was saying they were analyzing. I just wanted to know by when, Chairperson, can we get that analysis? So that we just don't wait here until Christmas. If we have to wait for Christmas, then so be it. But I just want to know, when are we going to get this? What else is there? I don't want to be pedantic, Chairperson, and the reason I was raising this issue of these laptops and gadgets and apps is because the issue of these gadgets was used as a reason for all these irregularities in expenditure and all of that. And the question I just keep asking myself is the response that was given, which was making sense and which leads to this question now. I think I accept the answer that there had to be a tablet which had to be configured so that people don't go to all kinds of undesirable sites and all of that. I'm not so sure, then, Chairperson. Maybe the person that was responding here can explain if. Does it mean that laptops, you can't configure laptops so that if we're not able, the real substance of the question here, Chair, is that if you were not able to procure these tablets, why couldn't you go to plan B and go to laptops? If I look at even prices, Chairperson, it's much of a muchness. I know there's different ranges and all of that, but the price of a laptop and the price of a tablet, it's really much of a muchness. And why did we have to incur all these irregularities in financial management when, in my view, there could have been plan B, as in cheaper laptops, because these are just one-offs that we use and all of that. So you don't have to go to top of the range laptops. So why couldn't we use laptops? And I'm asking this question, Chair, for a simple reason, that we don't want to have critical departments like Stats SA with all kinds of reports that raise red flags on the issue of irregularity on supply chain issues. Yeah, I think that's
Honorable Mani.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. SG, a quick responses to the two members and so that I can do the summary and we wrap up the issue.
Chair, I will just allow Yandi to deal with the release that Honorable Mani raised, and then I'll deal with the rest of the questions from Honorable Tobias as well as Honorable Mani. Please, Yandi, deal with that quickly.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. And,
maybe just before Yandi, is that a new hand, Honorable Fear?
Chair, thanks. It was a legacy hand, but let me make a comment, Chair, on the basis that, you know, for us, we need to play oversight and check and evaluate value for money, but not to do specifics on procurement matters. But, Chair, thanks.
Thank you. SG?
Let me allow Yandi to start and then I'll come after her.
Thank you, Chair. What I meant by analysis was that we're going to run a table because we don't have all the information in the release, but we can run a table on the analysis. In terms of access to water by population group, by looking at the population...
You'll have to repeat the table thing. I didn't get that.
Oh, I was saying, Chair, that by analysis, I meant we were running a table to just get this information that Honorable Mani was talking about, because it is not contained in the release, in the statistical release that is out there. But it is information that will be in the data that people can go on Supercross and see for themselves what it looks like. But we have the results of that table. Now I can give the results.
Through you, Chair.
Go ahead, Yandi.
All right, thank you, Chair. On piped water inside dwelling, the African headed households had access, they were about 48.8%, and colored 89.5%, and Indians 97.3% of the households had access to piped water inside dwelling, and for white it was 97.7%. Electricity seems to be very high for all, electricity for lighting, as was said by the SG, because we have over 90% of households having access to electricity for lighting. Africans at 90, Black African at 93%, colored 97.7%, Indian 99.4%, white 98.9%. So, Chair, it's just that we cannot put all the information in the key results, but it's information that is available that we can run at any given point when we're asked to do so. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Yandi. Let me deal with the last questions. The post-enumeration survey is a UN acclaimed method that we use. And in this regard, in terms of expenditure, we are not in a position to give it now in terms of a breakdown, but we can do that, because what happens is that when you procure, you firstly have a list of laptops that you will need and the number of vehicles that you will need for a particular province. And once you have that, when you go and procure them and finally have them, you procure bulk, and then in the actual implementation, so we usually say if we need, say, 150,000 gadgets, you always have a buffer that you build, even in questionnaire printing, because in questionnaire printing, you would always go to a household and find that you have to unpack. But in one of the things is that there are new settlements that emerge after you have procured, and you need to cater for them, and then you make sure that you deal with that. So gadgets and cars can be shifted from one province to another. And in particular, if we have to come back on the actual expenditure of the Northern Cape, we can do so. But unlike when we budget from a provincial perspective, it's because as a national entity, we budget nationally, and then we unpack due to operational needs. We can give that available. But as we are saying, the biggest challenge in the Northern Cape is the farming. So the land mass is big, the number of people is less. But the actual undercount of people in the Northern Cape was not the highest. the highest undercount was in the Western Cape at 35.58%. The Northern Cape, the undercount was sitting at 33.41%, whereas at household level, the Northern Cape was sitting at 27.14%. So it's because we unpack every variable and every aspect, and we also look at the consistency of the variables as we do so. So necessarily, it's not like we give the Northern Cape a lesser budget to end up with a lesser undercount. We treated our provinces equitably and equally in terms of dealing with the entire operation. We don't first start by saying, here is a smaller population, give them a lesser number of budget. But obviously, provinces like your Gauteng, where you have structures and everything from your mapping, you need to reach out to them. So they would naturally have more cars, but it's not because the Northern Cape had less number of people. It was the points that we were visiting, and the farming communities were giving us a lot more challenge. Now, on the gadgets, I think we have, Calvin has dealt with the issue of the app. The global procurement challenges were equally challenging for laptops and for tablets. That is number one. Number two is that it is not necessary that the laptops were much more cheaper, because when we're working on this, we're working with National Treasury and them, we were able to get iPads or tablets at a lot more cheaper rate in terms of the specs that we needed. But tablets are even easier to carry in the bag when a field worker must travel rather than the laptops, because your laptops that are relatively cheaper are usually your heavier ones and the bulkier ones. So, but the global disruptions, even if we had chosen laptops, we would have been disrupted the same, because all of them are manufactured externally, the majority of them, and would have had to procure them. And COVID-19 had put a seal on all of them. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you, SG. We have allowed you to both make this comprehensive presentation and respond comprehensively to all of the questions. I think it's now a point that I just need to summarize, and then we'll wrap up this session. And basically, the view of the committee, after I have listened to you, I do get that members do appreciate and commend the work that Staff SA has really produced under very difficult circumstances, both objective and subjective circumstances, given the fact that all of this had to deal with the COVID challenges, which are objective factors, as well as disruptions in relation to what would have happened in about two provinces, but also the internal challenges within Stats SA that you should continue to attend to. Honorable Manye, I am now making a summary. I see you raising a hand.
Yeah, sorry, Chair. I raised it
what
before
is the
you started.
Now? Sorry,
no,
what
it's
is...
just a quick. No, it's just a quick one. That the one question about the unqualified report. What was the target? That's the only question
okay.
that.
Okay.
Has been attempted, yeah.
That's fine. Thanks. SG, can you quickly attend to that?
Thank you indeed, Chair. Our target was to get a clean audit, and not only on the census. Throughout years in our operations, our target is to get a clean audit. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Manye. I hope that because you did raise that. I think that's the response. So I was saying, members, We do have an appreciation and we do commend the work that we've done to really assist the country, both in planning, coordination issues, and for us to have a picture of where we are as a country. The census does give us that. Members have raised that it is very concerning that that there are areas that you could not do your work in, and those are outside of the realm of Stats SA. These are in their political realm, and we need to attend to them. Hence, it's important to highlight them. The issue of that there would be an insistence on demographics of enumerators raises a problem, and it's not an issue that Stats SA would be in a position to attend to. And I think we have to flag and highlight that as part of our work as the oversight body, that we need to make interventions in that regard. I think the third aspect arising out of this, this issue of undercounting, I think has been thoroughly explained, but it does need for us to explain that undercounting is not equal to unreliability of information. And that, in fact, the reliability and quality assurance are not affected by undercounting, because there would have been measures that would have been put in place in that regard to attend to that. So the fact that there's undercounting, we should not conclude and make that because there's undercounting, therefore there's a deficiency in what we have as a product. Secondly, I think it's also important to take forward the issues raised as a recommendation that as you do your provincial launches, it would help that you produce these sectoral reports and DDM designed or focused kind of stats as part of empowering the decision makers and ordinary citizens about these kind of issues. Secondly, I think the background as requested in terms of the water issues, I think there's an indication that can be done and be sent back to us as information. And the issue that you're asking that it be also sent, Honorable Manu, I think we take that into account. I see you wrote that now on the chat. But overall, there does seem to be other issues that will continue to handle without disturbing the work and issues of independent operations. But they have to do with the political framework under which Stats SA has to operate. So there are some ongoing homework on quite a number of issues. And I think as a committee, we'll stay on course on those things to ensure that they are attended to. And I might not be satisfied, but I think we must get into a process where we demonstrate the willingness to respond to many of these issues to the best of our abilities in relation to them. So with that, Deputy Minister and the SG, want to thank you for spending time with us, because you did not just speak to these 11 members of this committee. This is a public platform. You, for the last 3 hours, you have been speaking to the nation about these processes, including all of those contentious issues, because we're quite a diverse nation. We come from different backgrounds. We see things differently, and that should not be a problem. Should be seen more as a strength that we can manage as part of our nation building project. But I want to just thank you for that, and that then concludes the presentation on Census 22. We will continue, and I'm sure many institutions are going to be, you have to be ready for the accessibility of the Census 22 results, because different institutions and stakeholders are going to require it for their own purposes, and they're going to require specific issues around that. And I hope your operations in that regard are on top gear, so that there's no difficulty in accessing that, whether it is us as an oversight body, or a municipality, or the Commission on Gender, around issues of gender, or any other institution. So with that, thank you very much. We will then step off that item, and I will ask Mr. Mwepe and Ms. Moy to get us to the next item and get the very quick discussion on our minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. In front of us members are the minutes of the meeting of the 20th of October, which was last week. I'm going to go page by page, and members will comment.
Chair, may I request, and no disrespect, are we still needed to stay for the minutes, or should we log out, Chair?
Well, I'm sure you after spending 3 hours with us, you can't be tired to spend 10 minutes with us.
Oh, it's in order, Chair. We will stay on. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Even though we are not going to contribute in the minutes. Let's proceed, Ms. Moy, and members. We're just going to start with, as she goes page by page, with corrections.
Yes, Chairperson. Page one is the attendance. Page one, attendance. Page two, introduction. Page three, continuation of the presentation. Conclusion. Page four, adjournment. Thank you, Chairperson. Those are the minutes of the 20th.
Thank you. Honorable members, any corrections you have picked up? Minutes would also have been sent to you, so they are taken as read. Any corrections? And if none, do I have a mover for the adoption of the minutes?
Chair, move for the adoption of the minutes.
Honorable Pillay moves for the adoption of the minutes. Do I have a seconder?
I so move, Chair.
Honorable Tobias seconds. The minutes are duly adopted. Any other issue, any objection to the adoption of the minutes? None. Thank you. Thank you, colleagues, honorable members. The time now is exactly 12:30. It would have taken 3.5 hours. I appreciate that we took so much time for a very important aspect of our nation, the Census 22. Thank you, colleagues, and thank you, SG, and your team. It's not even 10 minutes that you had to wait. So I want to thank you. We will continue engaging with you beyond the census. There are quite a number of things that we're going to have to attend to. There's a bill coming. There are a lot of other issues that we're going to put into our program. I would have spoken to the secretary that with this new committee, we want to be aligned. We want to follow you when you do your quarterly reports and other things. We are going to engage on many issues. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Bye.